Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and there's not really a lot to add to that distillation of yesterday's tragedy, except, I suppose, the question of how it is best talked about. I'll explain in a little more detail after the news, but I thought it might be possible. In fact, I thought it was probably important to dispense with the "but Gaza" position on yesterday's horrors. 15 dead, a profoundly and obviously anti-Semitic attack. Anti-Semitism did not begin on October the 7th or with the foundation of the modern state of Israel in 1948. But I've tried, and I'm looking at a lot of the coverage, and I'm wondering whether it's possible to do that and why we should try.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the family of a man who overpowered one of the Bondi Beach gunmen has been called a hero of Australia by his family. Ahmed Al-Ahmed was seen tackling the man and taking his gun off him in Sydney. 15 people were killed in the attack on the first night of Hanukkah. Ephraim Mervis, the UK's chief rabbi, says he was devastated but not surprised by the attack.
Very similar to our response to the Heaton Park Synagogue terrorist attack on Yom Kippur. It was the kind of thing we knew was inevitable. We were praying, hoping that it would never happen. But no surprise, because of the tone on the streets within our societies, with the hatred that is being expressed to the Jewish state, to Jews, and to Judaism.
The victims were aged between 10 and 87. Police say a 50-year-old father, who was shot dead, and his 24-year-old son, who is in hospital, were behind the shooting. The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, has promised tougher gun laws in the wake of the attack. In other news, police are investigating what they've called the apparent homicide of the Hollywood director Rob Reiner. The bodies of the 78-year-old and his wife Michelle were found inside their home in Los Angeles yesterday. He is best known for directing films including When Harry Met Sally and The Princess Bride. The British Medical Association is set to reveal whether this week's junior doctors' strike in England will go ahead. Medics have been voting on a new offer from the government, including an expansion of training places. The government has condemned as politically motivated the prosecution of Jimmy Lai in Hong Kong. The 78-year-old British national is facing a life sentence after being found guilty of conspiracy and sedition charges. He was arrested in 2020 under Beijing's national security law. Cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin will soon be regulated in a similar way to other financial products in the UK. The Treasury says new laws coming in from 2027 will make the industry more transparent. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 62 at 97.11. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 13. LBC weather, heavy rain across northern England, Wales and the West Country. Dry elsewhere with some sunny spells in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 10. A very good morning indeed to you. Any developments as they occur will, of course, be shared with you imminently regarding the shootings in Sydney yesterday. I think it might be the first time it's happened to me. I know people who live by Bondi Beach, and I checked in with them just to make sure that they were okay. And then as it became clearer in the course of yesterday morning that it was a very targeted attack, targeted upon a Hanukkah celebration on the beach, I realised that it was less likely that your friends who live nearby may have been caught up in the terror. I can see why so much of the coverage today focuses upon the extraordinary gentleman who intervened and who disarmed one of the terrorists. I mean, crikey, what's the first thing that goes through your mind when you see stuff like that? I imagine it's what would I do that? Would I be able to do that? At first, I thought he must have some sort of training. Oh, we don't know an awful lot about him except that he's a fruiterer. I think he runs a fruit shop. And as Nick quite rightly stressed, he is a Muslim. But I mean, what does that mean? Does he go to mosque every Friday? Is he devout? Does he actually worship? Does he believe in God? We don't know. But of course, it wouldn't matter, would it, if you were attacking him for his origins, just as same goes for Jewish people. It wouldn't matter how observant they were or how, quote, Jewish they were if they were being attacked simply for their origins, as appears to have been the case yesterday. Then, why quibble? Why split these hairs? But I think it's human to reach for the hero more than for the horror. The Times gets it right, bloodbath at Bondi Beach, but the Eye paper goes with the hero of Bondi Beach, as does the Daily Mail, and they're not often singing from similar hymn sheets. The Sun, Bondi Fiend's dad and son, that's probably the second traffic stopper for non-Jewish people. Obviously for Jewish people, the absolute moment of impact is the thought that it could have been you. The thought that these targets are being painted once again onto the backs of people who've done nothing but be born into a certain faith. But for the rest of us, the heroism of the have a go hero, if you like, and the fact that the killers appear to be father and son, that's another impenetrable. That's something else that you struggle to get your head around, isn't it? I'm obviously never entirely sure how to approach conversations like this. I'm not even 100% sure sometimes that there are phone-ins to be had, because phone-ins involve a little bit of to-ing and fro-ing, don't they? A little bit of tension. But something a bit odd has happened in the last few hours, overnight, last night really, and then this morning. And I'd like to talk to you about it, and then I would like you to talk to me about it as well. The first is this. I won't tell you what company I was in, but I was in company last night, and the subject inevitably came up. And I tried, somewhat clumsily, I don't generally get stuck into heated debates when I'm in my private life, because I do so much of it in my public life, but sometimes people expect you to. And you kind of feel a bit of a responsibility sometimes as well if you, but there were no facts that I was aware of that everybody else wasn't aware of. But I just caught myself balking at what you could loosely describe as the "but Gaza" response. Now, in case you're new to this program, I have been unrelenting in my critique of what has been done to the Palestinian people in Gaza by Benjamin Netanyahu's regime. And as a consequence of that, I have myself been called anti-Semitic. So I don't want anyone to doubt my clarity on what has gone on. But what we saw yesterday, I felt last night, should be separated from the broader context of conflict in the Middle East. And the reason why I felt that, and I thought when the idea occurred to me as I sought to explain to somebody last night, to more than one person, in fact, as I sought to explain why I felt that that was an inappropriate response, I'll tell you what it reminded me of. It reminded me some weeks after October the 7th, when you were being policed in your language and being told by many people that you couldn't critique what was going on in Gaza without condemning Hamas. So you'd be making a point about something quite specific and quite well contained, and somebody would say, but do you condemn Hamas? And it became almost frustrating, because of course you bloody do. But why do you have to keep asking me? And I felt very similar last night, from exactly the opposite end of what you could call the spectrum, when the "but Gaza," as if you couldn't really condemn or mourn. I went to church yesterday, which I don't do every single week, but I don't know, something compelled me to go to church yesterday as this story was developing. And I felt that people were policing our reactions to it again by simply saying, "but Gaza." And what I said last night, and it kind of ended the conversation, really, but not in a, I hope, an uncomfortable way. We'll have to see. I just pointed out that Jewish people were attacked, murdered, persecuted long before October the 7th, 2023, long before the foundation, the formation of the modern state of Israel in 1948. And therefore, you have to be able to talk about anti-Semitism without somebody saying, but Gaza. And I stress again to people who are new to this programme or who are new to me, that I am often accused of anti-Semitism myself by critiquing, by attacking, by condemning the conduct of Benjamin Netanyahu's administration in Gaza and beyond. So please don't think that I'm coming at this from any other position than the one that I expound and explain to you at one point a couple of years ago on an almost daily basis. So that's what I felt on the way into work this morning. I wanted to talk about I'd start thinking about the change in approach to all Jewish people, not just people who are outspoken and explicit in their support of Netanyahu. Obviously, anti-Semitism is on the rise in every imaginable way. The events in Manchester most recently driving that point home. And it's not just the headline news. It's the graffiti and the shouts and the obviously anti-Semitic behavior that has nothing to do with criticizing the current Israeli government and its policies in Gaza. But you've had to be very clear-eyed, almost perhaps brave, to hold on to that distinction, to be clear about the fact that critiquing that administration or that regime in no way involves a sort of visceral ancient hatred of Jews. Even if people accuse you of it, you have to be true to yourself. So I thought today we would use our time best by talking about the hideous events in Sydney without permitting, if that's the right word, because I'm policing your language now, without allowing, without adding is probably the best word to use, without adding, but Gaza. So that very naively is what I was kind of kicking around in my head when I got off the tube this morning. Let's not do but Gaza. And then I opened my newspapers and I saw that they're not allowing you, no one's allowing you to do that either. Commentators in all the right-wing media trying to claim that attending a march in solidarity with Palestinian people makes you complicit in what happened yesterday. Critiquing Netanyahu's actions in Gaza makes you complicit in what happened yesterday. The idea that you could recognize the reality, the horror, and the growth in anti-Semitism without adding, but Gaza, in the same way that people would add, but do you condemn Hamas, but from two completely polarized positions, just breaks my heart, actually. I've got to be honest with you. It's as if you are being told by, and I don't know if it's appropriate to name the columnists, but you can probably work it out for yourself, that anybody who has added their voice to concern about tens of thousands of people, tens of thousands of innocent people being killed, are somehow adding to the hatred of the men responsible for this attack or creating the environment in which it could happen is so absurd. But it only really hit me as absurd when I realized that it was going to be, and I'm going to put the word almost here, and that's going to give you a little prompt as to what the question's going to be. It is almost impossible to talk about this without reference to Gaza. They won't let you. And by they, I mean people like Rod Liddell in The Sun and other commentators in right-wing media. I'll read you some of the words in case you think that I'm exaggerating. Here you go. Paloma Faith, Michael Sheen, all the rest of you pro-Palestine groupies, you have been on the wrong side, the racist side, the anti-democratic side, the side that stones homosexuals and murders people in a park. And you sort of think, well, all they've done, to the best of my knowledge, these people, is express horror and sadness at the countless killings, the unknowable at the moment killings in Gaza. So the idea that I could come on the radio this morning and say, can we just leave but Gaza out of it, today at least? In much the same way that in the immediate aftermath of October the 7th, I did tell you that I wasn't going to take calls about Israel. The terrorist atrocity is either justifiable or not justifiable. And in my world, in my moral universe, it's never actually justifiable. I mean, there are lots of other things that are not justifiable in my moral universe, which don't usually get called terrorism. And we've talked about a few already this morning. But Gaza, how can people have a conversation that allows this incident, this horror, its proper place, if other people are going to be shouting "But Gaza" from the opposite side of the barricades, from the people who are either supportive of or comfortable with or less outraged by what's happened there? So that's the question. Can we? I mean, is it pointless even to try? Should we ignore the sort of right-wing ghouls and vampires queuing up to pretend that little old ladies marching through London with placards saying "Free Palestine" are somehow supportive of or complicit in terror attacks? They won't let you do that. You're not allowed to march for peace without being accused of terrorist sympathies. But should we try anyway? Is it right to try to talk about what happened in Sydney yesterday without any reference whatsoever to Gaza? Because I'm not going to lie to you, I thought it was really important to try. And I'm not sure that we can get even to the first junction without admitting that it's impossible. I thought it was really important to try. Because the people killed in Sydney yesterday have nothing to do with what's happening in Gaza. The people killed at the synagogue in Manchester have nothing to do with what's happened in Gaza. If members of the Israeli government may try to conflate the two, but we can refuse to. We can acknowledge that the attacks upon civilians anywhere, but, you know, most obviously and most recently outside Israel, outside the Middle East, attacks upon Jewish civilians there are not and never can be a just retaliation or a just response to things that have gone on in Gaza. And yet, you can tell from my voice, I'm confident of my own position that would have been a really good thing to do. But as I picked through the right-wing commentators this morning, I realised that that's the last thing that they want, that they're desperate to bring Gaza. They're desperate to bring this back into the conversation. They won't even let people now say this is anti-Semitic, this is hideous, this is profoundly important. But today at least, maybe not forever, could we not conduct the conversation without saying "But Gaza"? And then I discovered that the people who are horrified by what's happened in Gaza may try, but the people who are supportive of or comfortable with it are shouting "But Gaza" from the rooftops. You don't laugh at me, right? I did not see that coming. I thought, if I go on the radio tomorrow and explain why I don't think we should bring Gaza into our response to and mourning of this tragedy, I will get attacked by the people who are... Attacked is a strong word, especially in this context. I will get abused and insulted by people who see themselves as great champions of the Palestinian people. I say, you can't bring Gaza into this moment. And the reason why you can't bring Gaza into this moment is obvious. Two words for you: Holocaust and pogrom. Anti-Semitic hatred, anti-Semitic violence predates all of the 20th century events and 21st century events in the Middle East. So I did not see that coming, that people from the, I don't know how you want to describe it, the anti-Palestinian position or the pro-Netanyahu position would be shouting Gaza even louder than the people from the middle ground, the people who refuse and will always refuse and have always refused to consider one death to be more tragic than another death by dint of the accidents of birth that define the people who died. So should we try? Can we try? Or is it ridiculous? Stroke impossible? Stroke wrong? Stroke naive? Stroke daft? Stroke idealistic? Stroke dangerous? I don't know. But should we try? Should we have tried? Is it already too late to try? Can you talk about the horrors in Sydney yesterday without people who are diametrically opposed to each other regarding the Israeli actions in Gaza, shouting "But Gaza" from the rooftops? I don't want to sound... I don't know what word I'm looking for now. I don't want to sound tone deaf. But if I'd lost someone yesterday, I don't think I would want Gaza to be brought into it. And not because I've got any, but precisely because the person I've lost has no responsibility for what's gone on there. No role, no blame. And yet, I open my newspapers this morning, I turn on my television, and everyone's shouting, "But Gaza," even people who can't agree with each other about any other aspect of this entire horror show. That's my starting point. It may not be the end point, and I'd really like your help with this. 0345 60 60 973 is the number that you need. Is it right to try, or to have tried, to have a conversation about an anti-Semitic terror attack, an anti-Semitic mass murder, the mass murder of 15 Jewish people, without bringing Gaza into it? Or is that, I don't know, I can't run through that list of adjectives again, stupid, wrong, etc.? 0345 60 60 973 is the number that you need.
LBC.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirement for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
My beans have been to Mexico. They once went to Peru. My beans, they flew to Portugal, then went to Tuvalu. My beans were with me in Italy, then came with me to Greece. I slurped their sauce on Spanish shores. I nibbled them in Nice. My Heinz beans have seen the world. They've traveled far and wide because they are, as we all know, too good to leave behind.
Okay, let me stop you there, sir. You still have to check them into the hold.
Oh, all right then. Honestly.
Beans means Heinz.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 60 60 973.
I could have done a shorter intro, couldn't I? I think. In many ways, I wanted to come on the radio today and explain to people who see themselves, and who are indeed champions of the Palestinian people, defenders of the Palestinian people, why it would be deeply inappropriate to shout "But Gaza" in response to yesterday's horrors in Sydney. I thought I would be doing debate with those people, with whom I disagree on many, with whom I agree on many issues, most issues. But on this issue of the appropriate response to this atrocity, "But Gaza" is inappropriate, I believe. And, of course, by the time I came on air, the Gaza bellow had been coming from the other side of the political debate or the humanitarian debate, and I did not see that coming. I don't know why. I probably should have done, but I didn't. It's 23 minutes after 10. Phone lines are open. Help me out with this. 0345 60 60973. Should we try at least to have the conversation without reference to the bigger picture? And I should also tell you, coming up later in the programme, as you've heard in the news, Jimmy Lai, the human rights campaigner in Hong Kong, has been found guilty at a ludicrous show trial of sedition and other offences. We'll be joined by Jimmy's son, Sebastian, towards the end of the programme today to reflect upon what that means for Jimmy, for his family, and for the broader cause. Farah is in Southfields. Farah, what would you like to say?
Hi. So I think yes, you can. And just for the benefit of your listeners, I've been on 28 national marches for Palestine. I've also been on the 4 anti-Tommy Robinson ones, including the one this weekend. So what I was going to say is it's really important to separate the conflict in Gaza with anti-Semitism. It's a 3,000-year-old hatred. And I think those people who are using Gaza to justify, which I just don't understand, because if you're protesting against one horror, how can you then justify another horror on a different set of people? And I just think, you know, these people are racist. It's a bit like when there are terrorists who are linked with Islam, then all Muslims are actually, you know, branded that way. And I think it's really important to get to the root of anti-Semitism. Nick's show was really interesting because he asked the question, you know, where did it start?
Yes, I heard that, actually. Anthony Seldon was on very good form. I think, and it sort of crystallised my thoughts as well, because you can have lots and lots of conversations about anti-Semitism that don't mention Gaza, but it's very hard to do. And this is the bit that I didn't see coming, because everybody who is supportive of Netanyahu's regime is shouting Gaza this morning.
But the other thing to sort of bear in mind is that what I've heard, especially since the synagogue terrorist attack,
yes,
is when you're talking about but Gaza, but a lot of people talking about the protests that I've been on and calling them hate marches and saying 85% of them I don't know what we're talking about. That's not true. It takes quite a lot to go and stand in the rain and, you know, -2, unless you really feel that you understand what's going on. And, you know, that there are a lot of Jews on this, on these marches again. And what really makes me feel unsafe and actually made me quite angry is the kind of hatred that's coming towards those of us who do not want to see people suffer, regardless of who they are. And, you know, a lot of it was coming past, you know, on Sheila's show, and then sort of came up, I think, on Henry's, where this weekend...
You listen to more of LBC than I do, which is actually only because I'm so busy, but I can't comment on things I haven't heard myself. None of us do.
This is stuff I've heard.
Yes, no, I know, but I can't comment on it, can I? Because I haven't heard it.
No, but I'm just sort of sharing kind of thing, what my perspective and what I've heard. And, you know, calling for Muslims to be banned, for us to be repatriated, you know, that kind of thing. And that makes me feel really unsafe as well. So, you know, Muslims have more in common with the Jewish community, especially when it comes to this kind of hatred, that, you know, it should unify us. And the but Gaza piece, I never understand, because you cannot...
You understand it, because what...
Oh, no, I do, but I don't...
It's conflation. The problem is that sometimes it seems as if the warning against conflation of being Jewish with support for Israel, is something that people who go on marches like the ones you go on get ticked off for. I'm not suggesting you make that conflation, but the criticism is of the conflation. How can you hold all Jewish people responsible for what's going on in Gaza? And they, you know, we don't know the details yet, but it may be that there is context to recent atrocities that the perpetrators see as being linked to Gaza, but when Benjamin Netanyahu leaps towards those conflations, when Benjamin Netanyahu and supporters in this country try to claim that marching in support of peace for Palestinian people and of course Israeli people, that doing any of these things, that recognizing a modern state of Israel, a modern state of Palestine, is in some way contributing to the terrorism, then you start thinking, well, if they're going to shout but Gaza, then don't the other lot have to shout but Gaza back again? I know that sounds a little bit crass and simplistic, but you can't leave the floor clear for people to claim that women like Farah are somehow... Hey, here's one. I've got one. 10:01, actually, this came in. James, you are complicit. Someone has gone to the trouble of texting that this morning. In what? In terror attacks for condemning carnage, for condemning the killing of innocents, for praying for peace. You're complicit in violence. It's extraordinary how that happens. But who polices these lines, if not us? But Gaza. If you are opposed to what's gone on in Gaza, I'm telling you not to say but Gaza this morning. But people who are in favour of it, comfortable with it, untroubled by it, are shouting but Gaza from the rooftop. So what do the rest of us do? What indeed do the rest of us do? It's coming up to 10:30. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where the question is complicated, or at least the question is quite straightforward, but the answers are anything but. The Telegraph's front page I didn't get to earlier, Hate and Heroism in Bondi, which covers it. It's too soon to wonder why we as humans zone in so enthusiastically upon the hero whose contribution to this is unknowable and uncountable, whereas the carnage and the death is already recorded. But I think it's got something to do with hope, hasn't it? It's got something to do with finding hope in an otherwise entirely bleak environment. But I think, as I say, it's too early to zone in on that as a topic for our conversation. 10:30 is the time. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
Police in Australia say a father and son were behind the anti-Semitic terror attack on Bondi Beach yesterday. 15 innocent people, including a Holocaust survivor and a 10-year-old girl, were killed in Sydney. The Hollywood filmmaker Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle have been found dead in Los Angeles. Police say they are treating their deaths as an apparent homicide. The British Medical Association is set to reveal whether this week's doctor's strike in England will go ahead. It has been consulting resident doctors on whether or not to press ahead with a 5-day walkout from Wednesday. LBC weather, heavy rain across northern England, Wales and in the West Country, drier elsewhere with some sunny spells in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
Caught in the chaos of Christmas, fearing crimbo limbo, Radio Times has your festive entertainment sorted. That's one less thing to worry about. So you can focus on wrapping the presents and buying the turkey. Pick up the Christmas issue for your 14-day guide to the best TV, streaming, film, radio and podcasts. Plus, plenty of reviews, recommendations and star-studded exclusives at your fingertips. It wouldn't be Christmas without Radio Times. On sale now.
My beans have been to Mexico. They once went to Peru. My beans, they flew to Portugal, then went to Tuvalu. My beans were with me in Italy, then came with me to Greece. I slurped their sauce on Spanish shores. I nibbled them in Nice. My Heinz beans have seen the world. They've travelled far and wide because they are, as we all know, too good to leave behind.
Okay, let me stop you there, sir. You still have to check them into the hold.
Oh, all right then. Honestly.
Beans means Heinz.
Merry Christmas, my love.
Merry Christmas, Mum.
Merry Christmas, Nanny.
Happy New Year!
From the UK's first mobile phone call to the first text, we've been connecting you at Christmas since 1984 on Vodafone, the nation's network. The nation's network, Vodafone UK, supporting the nation since 1984. Learn more at vodafone.co.uk/TNN.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10:32 is the time. I suppose as the conversation continues, some of the thoughts crystallise. And one of them is, there are clearly attempts afoot to claim or to argue that anybody who has criticised or condemned the killing of Palestinians in Gaza is somehow complicit in the terror attack in Sydney yesterday. And that cuts both ways. So my thoughts were directed at people who see themselves as champions of the Palestinian people. And my intention to come on air this morning and explain to them why they shouldn't be saying but Gaza, because anti-Semitic hatred goes back far beyond October the 7th, far beyond 1948. It goes back 3,000 years. It goes back beyond Christianity. And, of course, you can make the same argument to people claiming that criticising or condemning what has gone on in Gaza contributes to this form of anti-Semitic hatred today. You say the same thing to them. You say Holocaust and pogroms. Anti-Semitic hatred existed long before the current round of conflict in the Middle East or the current geopolitical, the 150-year-old, 120-year-old geopolitical context of that part of the world. But the one thing you're not allowed to do in this conversation, ever, is to speak to and for both, quote, sides, end quotes. You have to pick one and then furiously defend it. Let me read you two examples of that. The first is rather nice. The second proves my point in rather ugly fashion. This is from Tory. Thank you, James, for your stance on the Sydney murders. I had indeed thought, but Gaza. But you're absolutely right to point out the callousness of almost saying it was bound to happen, they had it coming. No, no, no. Well done for the depth of your analysis and compassion for all the victims of any kind of murderous hatred. Down with that sort of thing, right? Compassion for all victims of murderous hatred. How dare you have compassion for all victims of murderous hatred? Why can't you pick a side? And this comes in exact, well, 2 minutes later. Unbelievable, James O'Brien, even today you continue with your anti-Semitic rhetoric. Does anyone want to have a go at unpicking that? Or is it just on auto-send, do you think? Oh, he's talking about that. I just accuse him of anti-Semitism. That's mad. And you have Benjamin Netanyahu blaming Anthony Albanese, the Australian leader, for the terror attack because he has been unsupportive of what Netanyahu has been masterminding in Gaza. The truth is never ever going to come down, or righteousness is never ever going to come down at one of these two poles, is it? But what should the rest of us do in the meantime? Sophie is in York. Sophie, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James.
Hello,
thanks
Sophie.
For having me. Yeah, you asked a very important question. You know, what do the rest of us do? You know, what can I do? Me personally, I'm Jewish. I've got two young children. They don't go to a Jewish school. I never went to a Jewish school, so I didn't feel the need to send them to a Jewish school. I've just literally walked back home through the door because this morning, it's the second day of Hanukkah, obviously, as you're aware.
Yes.
This morning, I've spent the morning in my children's classes at school. I took our Hanukkahs in and I took donuts in for all the children and we lit the candles. As I do every year that my children have been at that school, I email the teachers at the, you know, around this time of year saying, it's that time of year again, yes. Would you like me to come in? My aim doing this is, you know, I would like the children, say in 10, 15 years' time, if they're getting mixed up in different situations, different circumstances, I would like them to look back on these years and remember, you know, Sophie came into school and she lit the candles. It was lovely. We played with dreidels. I took dreidels in. We had donuts. We, you know, we did a prayer. And, you know, I want them to just, it's education from an early age. That's what I can do. I can go in, I can educate at various different points of the year. I go in to talk about festivals, Passover, I talk about Shabbat, I've been in to talk about, because you just don't know later on in life what situation the children are going to be in. And I would just like to hope that they would think back with the positive thoughts about what Judaism is and remember it as a positive, you know, not as something scary, not something to be afraid of.
I mean, demystifying is,
exactly.
is really the name of the game, isn't it? And it cuts, of course, both ways. It cuts across all, particularly faiths and religions, but ethnicities as well. If it is a fear of the other, then the best thing you can do is de-other the other, as it were, and find the common ground. I always think of Joe Cox's words when I listen to things like you're telling. Harder than ever today, though, to do what you've just done, I think.
It was very hard. I had to email the school last night. We actually have made the decision not to take our children this evening to a public gathering to light the menorah in the city centre.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I'm sorry to be saying it to
yes,
you.
Yes, of course.
I can't tell you. It's been a very difficult decision. I think I personally just feel I can't risk the children. A child, a 10-year-old girl passed away on the beach. I actually used to live just round the corner from that beach.
Did
I was
you?
In Sydney for 2 years. My brother's still there. My sister-in-law works in a Jewish nursery. She's had colleagues that were there and knows people that have been, you know, injured. I think she knows somebody that has actually passed away.
Yeah.
She was in tears on the phone to me when I spoke to her last night. It's very sad. And what I would also like to encourage people, when you say, what do the rest of us do?
Yeah.
Please reach out. It's not about me and it's not about a specific person, but the Jewish people, we do have a very, very innate, like, sense of community and we feel things very strongly. Reach out to your Jewish friends, your Jewish colleagues, and just say, you know, I've had some lovely messages actually from old work colleagues. Just say, we're so sorry to hear about what's happened. We're thinking of you. Obviously,
a
lot of them know that I used to live in Australia, and have family still there. So they were checking in, which is very kind. And I appreciate all of that. You know, I just think, you know, that would be something nice that, you know, the average person on the street could just do to reach out to somebody that they know that is Jewish
and just
say, we are sorry and we're thinking of your community at this time.
And it's not a case of just presuming that everybody knows. It's actually worth making the effort to make that connection and to make that personal contact. I mean, you don't have to, because you made a really valuable contribution regardless. But on this issue of responding to it, whether you are supportive or unsupportive of the current Israeli administration, responding to what happened in Australia by raising events in Gaza, is it daft of me to think that we shouldn't be doing that? That can actually be avoided or swerved?
I don't want to say it's daft. I was just saying to one of the producers earlier was, what was the motivation behind
the
father
yet.
And son?
Well,
the motivation, what's it stemmed from?
I think you can say with a large degree of confidence that it was anti-Semitic, can't you?
Yeah. There has been a lot of marches in Sydney over the Sydney Harbour Bridge. I don't know if you remember, not too long ago, they were putting up photos and banners promoting the Ayatollah in Iran and all of the Islamic, the terrible regime that's over there. You know, I just feel like there's been a lot of influence and people are being very influenced by what they're seeing on social media. And as we all know, once you get into a trap of something on social media, it kind of spirals. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people are getting very easily influenced. And that is dangerous. It's almost
and
like addiction.
This is the problem, isn't it? Because you, obviously what you say is true, albeit that you prefaced it by saying we don't actually know anything about these perpetrators beyond the fact that they almost certainly, and I'm only saying that to be sort of pedantic, targeted Jews. It was obviously, I don't think we need any almost, an anti-Semitic attack. But anti-Semitism predates the regime in Iran. It predates the formation of the modern state of Israel. It predates October the 7th. It predates the horrors in Gaza. I guess none of us will, until we find out more about these particular perpetrators, no one can say, can they, that this is a response to X, Y, or Z. Do you see what I mean? If you plotted a graph of anti-Semitic hatred, I think it's going up at the moment. You will be feeling that a lot more keenly than I do.
The key point is with this is it's going up. And do you know what? It's just going to drive more people to want to go to live in Israel. You know, not unfortunately, it's just my brother. So I've got a brother in Sydney and a brother in Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
And my brother, I spoke to them all yesterday, but my brother in Tel Aviv was in tears on the phone to me thinking, you know, my Australia brother, he just wants him to pack up and move to
come,
Israel.
And come to Israel, yes.
Sophie, pack up your things. You've got to come and live here. So, you know, it's a vicious cycle, isn't it? You know, these attacks keep happening. And unfortunately, the safest place that we'll probably all feel is in the state of Israel.
And that, of course, and I'm not putting these words into your mouth, this is something I've worked out over the years of discussing these issues, that is why people's defence of Israel's right to defend itself, where it reaches parts that other patriotic people in other countries and other parts of the world will never be able to fully conceive of, will never be able to properly understand. It is where you go when it starts happening again. And that is something that makes perfect sense and which can also, of course, be manipulated. And that's why you feel that way. I want to go there, and if you get there, that's why you feel that almost anything is defensible in defense of that territory. And that is where many of the problems that we're still not clear we should or shouldn't be talking about today stem from. Sophie, thank you. Helen is in, Wollongong, which must be in Australia. Helen, what would you like to say?
I was just telling your producer there. I'm just south of Sydney and been watching local media, listening to the official statements from premiers, prime ministers, ASIO, police, pre-chiefs and so on. Yes. Nobody has mentioned anything to do with Gaza or Palestinians or anything. They are just saying we're investigating this, the police are on top of it, the different branches are working together. We're not going to say anything until we know more about these two guys and their motives and who they were and so on.
Heartening, yes. I suppose. I mean, I have to counter, if that's the right word, by pointing out that the Prime Minister is being blamed by the Israeli Prime Minister for the attack. I mean, he has literally said that the Australian government let the disease of anti-Semitism spread and the result is the horrific attacks on Jews that we saw today. And all Albanese has done in that context is decide to recognise a Palestinian state. So I'm glad to hear what you tell me, but the difficulty of keeping the two phenomena apart or keeping them separate is highlighted by the fact that Netanyahu has already attacked your prime minister. Well, he is trying to lead the mourning of a hideous atrocity in his own country.
Well, I don't know whether you heard his Alvo's response to that, and he has appointed a commissioner for anti-Semitism, and she has produced a report, and he was going through the items in that report that he has done already upon her recommendations, and that they're working on it quietly. I think making a big noise about these events encourages people who want to do these sort of horrendous things to do them just to get the notoriety. It's not so much that they are, you know, hugely anti-Semitic, but they've done something and they're on the news throughout the world.
Oh, I think they're probably hugely anti-Semitic. But as you say, as you began your call by pointing out, you can't make any sweeping conclusions until more is known. There's also a slight danger, isn't there, of telling people who are outraged by something that by expressing their outrage they're making things worse, so they should stay silent about the thing that outrages them lest their outrage inspire others. That's a slightly circular argument that is potentially quite dangerous. You know, there's something awful happening over there, but if you keep pointing it out then other people might do awful things. So could please shut up about the awful thing that's going on over there and just let us get on with it, will you? I don't buy that personally, Ellen, but I understand where you're coming from. It's 10:46.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
The overwhelming majority of 20-somethings are not living with a partner and a young child as they were 30 years ago. And I do think some of that is in part down to the work that they are being paid for or being underpaid for and the fact that taxes have become so punitive, particularly for young people.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, drop up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P.
Think, do the 4 trip checks before every long journey. National Highways.
Protect your pets over this festive period. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk and enjoy Christmas covered.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friends, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Airalo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 10:48. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. So just take these two positions in tandem with each other. This is a text. It's unsigned. People are not protesting against the Jewish religion. We are protesting against the Israeli government's treatment of the Palestinians. So a clear distinction between Judaism and administration, and Israeli administration, Benjamin Netanyahu's government. A distinction that many campaigners against anti-Semitism are clear needs to be made. Myself included. You have to make that distinction clear. And then I'll read you this from the Israeli President Isaac Herzog. The people of Israel stand together with all of you in this very dark and difficult moment. The Jewish people are strong, resilient and united, and our message is clear. So the necessity, the importance of remember. I mean, there's tons of Jewish people in this country who are outraged by what's been going on in the name of Israel, even as they know Israel is the place that they go to when the horrors start happening again closer to home. But the importance of conflation seems to be quite a two-sided coin, doesn't it? It's you can't conflate Israeli positions with Judaism, and nor should you. But the Israeli government does it all the time. And that, again, is another knot that is almost impossible to untangle. But I'm still where I was at the beginning. Today should not have been a day for shouting "But Gaza," or even "But Israel," in the context of the murders in Sydney. But the loudest shouts in the context of British media come from people trying to blame little old ladies with Free Palestine placards, or trying to blame the Australian Prime Minister, in the case of Benjamin Netanyahu, for a terrorist atrocity that's unfolded on his own soil. And I don't see who that helps. I really don't. Except, I suppose, in some sense, Benjamin Netanyahu. Russell's in Temple Fortune. Russell, what would you like to say?
Oh, good morning, James.
Hello,
yeah, hi. I think the first thing I'd like to say is that, you know, this what happened in Sydney kind of impacted us directly. I have cousins that live in the area, and my cousin's daughter is the senior registrar at the hospital where all the casualties went.
Oh,
so
God.
It kind of, you know, it has a great impact, and you know, and we heard obviously last night that the rabbi that was killed is actually from Temple Fortune as well. I don't know, and we don't know him.
Okay.
But I agree with you. I think it's not about, you know, "But Gaza." But you know what annoys me as such is the fact that what we saw in Sydney is what globalized the Intifada means. Intifada is about, you know, killing Jews, whether they're in Israel, Manchester, Sydney, Washington, where these attacks have occurred, October the 7th. And I just feel I feel very strongly that, I have no problem with people marching about, you know, Free Palestine. You know, I personally believe that in the two-state solution, I know that, you know, if you had a Palestine next to an Israel, that what a strong economic powerhouse
I'm with you. You know, I am. I mean, what is it? Because the idea that the marches, the protests are containing people possessed of the opinions that you describe, hideous opinions, that hinge upon this conflation of Judaism with support for the Israeli army, with the support for the Israeli government, is clearly true. But I don't know how you police it. What would you do differently if I put you in charge? Because, and I need to remind you of this, although it's uncomfortable, that conflation is the bread and butter to Benjamin Netanyahu and Isaac Herzog. They always talk about Jews and the Israeli government as if they are one and the same thing. You and I know that they're not, but if Netanyahu and Herzog are always talking as if they are, then who gets to lecture other people on why they shouldn't?
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I think that...
I don't want you to agree with you. I want you to answer my question.
Yeah, I don't what do I think? I think that, as you know, I'm no fan of Netanyahu and his government. I think that, you know, he's always stated for the last 10 years that whilst he's in power, there will never be a Palestinian state.
Yeah.
I just think that sometimes, you know, he has been, I wouldn't say irresponsible, but has been kind of stirring the pot, for want of a better description, by completely ignoring the situation. I think that equally that, you know, with dare I say it, with Trump's involvement, which we're kind of talking about Gaza, which he didn't really want to do, but...
I don't know that you can. I wondered whether this hour would sort of prove the impossibility of trying to do the thing that we were wondering about trying to do, and I think it probably is, but you can mourn without mentioning it.
Indeed, but the point that I wanted to make was that, you know, we've got the situation now where Trump, you know, love him or hate him, I know you don't, you know, has come up with a solution, a staged solution that hopefully would lead to peace. But unfortunately, there are too many people around that just do not want that. They don't want to see the state of Israel exist. And there are people that don't want Jewish people to exist as well. And I think that...
And there are plenty of people who, unlike you, don't want a Palestinian state to exist either. Israeli public opinion at the moment is pretty strong on not wanting any Palestinian people in Gaza.
Well, obviously there are people like that. I would say, James, I think that they are a sizable minority. I think the majority, from my understanding, from the few Israelis that I do talk to, they would like to live in peace and harmony with their neighbours. But
I hate this. Didn't make me do this, but I think I should. But the most recent part, I'm going back to June of this year, where a poll conducted among Israeli Jews, and this was reported in
Haaretz,
82% reportedly supported the forcible expulsion of Palestinians from Gaza, 56% supporting the expulsion of Palestinian citizens of Israel from Israel.
But
82% is, I mean, even with a fairly hefty margin for error, that's heartbreaking, right?
Haaretz is the UK equivalent of Morning Star Online, so, you know...
But the polling was done by reputable pollsters.
Well, okay, but
it's not a communist. It's not a communist organ at all, by any stretch of the imagination. you know it isn't. It's just opposed to the current administration, but administrations it could be in favour of.
Yeah.
But anyway, I let's part as friends, as always, Russell, and my condolences to you and the people that you know in Sydney over what is an impossible atrocity to process, and which for Jewish people, and this is the biggest distinction of all, is a proof of your fears, and proof of fears that are constant and permanent and hundreds, thousands of years old. And that is why, I don't know, the slightly perhaps optimistic idea of being able to discuss this atrocity without reference to recent events in the Middle East is perhaps a little fanciful. Jason's in Nottingham. Jason, what would you like to say?
Hi, good morning, James. The comments you made just before Russell about the conflation of the Israeli state and the Jewish people, I think you almost nailed it there. Almost nailed it.
Nobody's perfect, mate.
That was the reason for my call. Right. We don't hate every Russian person in the world because Vladimir Putin and his government have invaded Ukraine. You know, we don't hate all Americans because Donald Trump is murdering civilians in the Caribbean. You know, we don't hate all Italians.
I understand your point, and I'm conscious of the clock, so I'm just going to throw something into the mix, but preempting what I suspect you're about to say. Neither is anybody blowing up the Orthodox Russian Church in Chiswick at the moment. So, so carry on with your point, but it's not quite as watertight as you may have thought.
The reason is none of those other governments or states hold themselves as bastions of that faith. Like Netanyahu and the Israeli government hold themselves as the bastions, the protectors of the Jewish faith, and therefore they are the Jewish faith, regardless of what they do. Israel governments, they've attacked Egypt, Lebanon, Syria, Iran, Gaza. They've attacked all their neighboring countries, not the Jewish people. But because the government hold themselves up as the bastions of the Jewish people get the blame. That's my take on it. Right?
Okay, and it's a take, as you say, and some of it is rooted in observable fact. The conflation or whatever word you want to use is clear. I think there were loads of biblical references, weren't there, when Benjamin Netanyahu put that extraordinary welcome reception on for Trump. But, you know, I mean, extraordinary in some ways, no more shocking or bizarre than the one that Keir Starmer laid on for Donald Trump himself, up to and including the king. But yeah, I mean, I guess here's the thing, and it's such a weird and dispiriting conclusion, but I think we've all been led to it by the conversation that we've had today and by horrific, very recent events and horrific recent events, in that you can't quite see resolution without separation. You can't quite see how any lasting peace could be achieved while it is impossible to extricate the current Israeli government from Jewish people. But that's point one. It's a triangle. This point two is anti-Semitism predates the current Israeli government by thousands of years. So you're never going to know until they tell you. And even then, they're not the most trustworthy people on the planet, whether an act of anti-Semitism is motivated by recent Middle Eastern events or whether it's part of the ancient hatred that every Jew I know and every Jew you know and every Jew on the planet lives in perpetual fear of. But the third thing is that while people are deliberately conflating the two from all angles, deliberately pretending to believe that being Jewish means being pro-current Israeli government, things aren't going to get better anytime soon.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, ministers have promised to ensure Hanukkah celebrations in Britain can go ahead safely. 15 innocent people, including a Holocaust survivor and a 10-year-old girl, were killed in yesterday's anti-Semitic Bondi Beach attack. Hanukkah events across the UK were used as vigils last night. Adam Zagoria Moffat is rabbi of St Albans Masorti Synagogue.
Waking up to get ready for the first night of Hanukkah and find that our sisters and brothers in Australia had been attacked in such a cruel way has been very difficult, as was the case with the Manchester attack. Maybe one of the worst aspects of it is that the first thing people said is, yeah, we're not surprised.
The gunmen in Sydney were a 50-year-old man who was shot dead by police and his 24-year-old son who is in hospital. The family of a man who tackled one of them have described him as a hero of Australia. Hollywood is paying tribute to Rob Reiner following his death aged 78 in an apparent homicide. The bodies of the actor and director and his wife Michelle were found inside a home in Los Angeles yesterday. The California governor, Gavin Newsom, says he'll be remembered for a remarkable filmography. The pro-democracy campaigner Jimmy Lai has been found guilty of national security offences in Hong Kong. The 78-year-old media tycoon, who is a British citizen, was arrested in August 2020 following anti-Beijing protests the previous year. The Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, has condemned it as a politically motivated prosecution. Mr Lai's son, Sebastian, says the UK should be doing more to secure his release.
Now it's time to put action behind words and, you know, make my father's release a precondition to closer relationships with China. Because how can you expect a fruitful relationship if they can't even put a 70-year-old man who's in such ill health on a plane and send him back home here in the UK where he belongs?
Sir Cliff Richard has revealed he has been treated for prostate cancer. He's told Good Morning Britain it's gone at the moment. Sir Cliff's joined calls for a national screening programme, something recently rejected by health officials.
We all deserve to have the same ability to have a test and then have start the treatments really early. I've only been in 1 year now, but in point of fact, every time I've talked with anybody, this has come up.
In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 97.32. That's up 83. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 13. LBC weather, some very heavy rain across South Wales and in Northern England and the West Country. Dry elsewhere with some sunny spells in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
3 minutes after 11 is the time. I don't know whether or not you remember the first time you heard from my friend Bill Browder. It was quite possibly on this show, as Bill himself would attest, when he first started campaigning against Vladimir Putin as a consequence of the murder, or at least the killing in prison, of his lawyer Sergei Magnitsky, after Sergei uncovered a massive fraud of the Russian people. Bill set himself the task, which he'll continue to pursue for the rest of his life, of holding the Kremlin to account, holding Vladimir Putin to account, and trying his very best to explain to people in the West just what a kleptocratic, murderous regime Putin was presiding over. And at the time, a lot of people didn't want to hear it. Not through particular affinity with the Russian leader, partly through greed. So much Russian money was swilling around London at the time that suggesting we should turn off those particular taps went down very, very poorly in the circles closest to the cash coming out of the taps, up to and including senior politicians, not of any particular party, although I think it was only the Conservatives who set up a very sort of well-organized Conservative Friends of Russia. There's another example of our double standards in this country in the media. Conservative Friends of Russia. Have a look at some of the names involved with that. Have a look at who went to the party, the launch party, and ask yourself whether they've suffered any consequences whatsoever for hopping into bed at the first opportunity with a regime that is now widely perceived as being our sworn enemy. And that's what today's phone-in is going to be about. Why were we so relaxed about everything? There are some headlines in the news today that, I mean, it's extraordinary that they're both appearing on the same day. Here's the first, right? Frontline is everywhere in fight with Russia, says MI6 head. Britain is already on the front line against Russia and should be ready for President Putin's export of chaos. That's Vladimir Putin, or, of course, if you speak fluent Farage, the politician in the world I admire most. He won't change his methods. This is the head of MI6 giving a speech later today. C is their code name, if you care about such things. Not M. I don't know. Is M head of MI5? Or I don't know. Don't at me. Anyway, C is giving a speech later today. Whether or not Q will be there, I do not know. Because, of course, if Q was there, they wouldn't let us know anyway. But Blaise Metrowelli will say that the front line is everywhere. And this is as a consequence of hybrid warfare, such as disinformation, sabotage and cyber attacks. I don't know whether you remember Carol Cadwalader saying we are already at war with Russia some years ago, because she had dug right into the manipulation of our minds on social media. In the original context of Brexit, the original immediate aftermath of Brexit, Carol trying to understand how people from her hometown of Portobello, I think, in Wales, could have been persuaded to vote to leave an organisation that had been measurably and brilliantly good for them. There's a question, you know, why? Carol was roundly derided. I remember Andrew Neil calling her a crazy cat lady and not suffering any censure whatsoever from his bosses at the BBC. Because anybody who tells you that BBC presenters aren't allowed to hold opinions is lying. You're only forbidden from holding certain opinions. Did Blaise Metrowelli used to be Q? Did she? Crikey. Is it a he or a she? Anyway, who knows? Blaze, not Belize. Just speaking to a screen now in front of me. That's what I'm reduced to. It fits, of course, with the Russian narrative, the idea of speaking to screens, because when Carol Cadwalader said, we're already at war with Russia, people like Andrew Neil attacked her in very misogynistic ways. I wonder whether now that the head of MI6 is saying, we are already at war with Russia, the front line is everywhere in the fight with Russia, people will A, pay a little bit more attention, and B, apologise to Carol. Don't hold your breath for the second bit. Air Chief Marshal Sir Richard Knighton, the Chief of the Defence Staff, will also deliver a speech today, calling upon the nation to build Britain's resilience in the face of growing threats and uncertainty. These lines, right? Sorry, I'm going to get a bit excitable. How are these lines not landing harder? Listen to this line here, right? Listen to this line here. he will say that the price of peace is increasing and warn of the increased probability of Russia invading a NATO country. Donald Trump trying to wash his hands of NATO, of course. Donald Trump never does anything that doesn't delight Vladimir Putin. Again, is that part of the reason why? Is it because so many people have kind of nailed their colours to Donald Trump's hideous mast that they can't now climb down? Is it linked to Trump? I don't know that it is, actually. I don't think all roads lead to Trump, but certainly Vladimir Putin's increased confidence and threat to the West has been aided and abetted by Donald Trump's policies and behaviour. Of that, no one can argue. So if you'd been one of the people saying, oh, don't worry about what Donald Trump says, just focus on what he does. If you'd been one of the people using Trump derangement syndrome as a description of people who can see the reality, as opposed to a description of people who think that he wasn't a desperate threat to all that we hold dear in the West, then does that stop you from acknowledging the true threat that Vladimir Putin poses? This is the chief of the defense staff in a speech he'll deliver later today. The war in Ukraine shows Putin's willingness to target neighboring states, including their civilian populations, potentially with such novel and destructive weapons, threatens the whole of NATO, including the UK. Wow. Blaise Metrowelli, the first woman to lead the agency, is speaking of aggressive, expansionist and revisionist Russia. This will be delivered from inside MI6 headquarters in Vauxhall. Putin should be in no doubt our support is enduring for Ukraine. The pressure we apply on Ukraine's behalf will be sustained. The export of chaos is a feature, not a bug, in the Russian approach to international engagement, and we should be ready for this to continue until Putin is forced to change his calculus. So, one of the reasons why this extraordinary, what would you call it? What's it like a word for complacency? Complacency, there you go. That's the word. Inertia is a slightly better word. That was Newton's first law, you know. It came up in a crossword yesterday. This inertia, this complacency. One of the reasons for it, I think, will be this. Nobody thinks they've been manipulated. So when Carol was saying, you don't understand, we're already at war with Russia. Russia is already massively damaging our national interest by encouraging people here to do things against our national interest. Most obviously Brexit. Nobody actually turned around. Nobody thought for a minute that they'd voted to leave the European Union because Vladimir Putin wanted them to. Right? Even when Farage was marching around singing Vladimir Putin's praises to the rooftops, he was still quite a fringe figure. It was only weirdos like me that were pointing out just what a hideous threat he potentially posed to all that we hold dear in the West, just like Donald Trump. You can't be a fanboy, a cheerleader for Vladimir Putin without being a traitor to British interests, without being a traitor to British values, let alone real politics, simple interests, economic interests, military interests. You cannot call Vladimir Putin the politician you admire the most without being diametrically opposed to the British interest. But he wasn't really taken very seriously back then. Of course, he is now. It might be too late to sit up and take notice. But nobody thought that they voted to leave the European Union because of Russian manipulation. I mean, who would? You're going to sit there and go, don't be daft. Oh, yeah, you got me. Oh, flipping Vladimir, eh? That's it. But all of the online chatter, and it's only got worse, not better, subsequently, about sovereignty or about, what was it, the EU-SSSR, was it? The Fourth Reich? Hey, all of this, the rhetoric that spoke to the destruction of the post-war peace across Europe, all of it suited the Kremlin down to the ground. So where they sowed seeds, we may never know. We may never find all of them, all of the bot farms, all of the people appearing on Russia Today to essentially act against the national interest from the right and the left of British politics. After Salisbury, after the killing of Dawn Sturgis, the attempted murder of the Skripals, again, you know, Navalny and Litvinenko, others, all sorts of demonstrations of the fact that Russia is our sworn enemy. And we just sat there, twiddling our thumbs, calling Carol Cadwallader a crazy cat lady, setting up conservative friends of Russia, claiming that it's, well, have we had Putin derangement syndrome yet? We've had Brexit derangement syndrome. We've had Trump derangement syndrome. How long till someone comes up with Putin derangement syndrome? Even as the head of MI6 describes the front line with the fight against Russia as being everywhere. And here's the other headline, which in some ways is more visceral. This might actually hit you harder than a woman, the most senior spy in the country, standing up and describing the threat that Russia is already posing to us. It's a little bit man bites dog, isn't it? Head of MI6 warns against Russia. Listen to this. Germany is to send troops to dig trenches and build anti-tank barriers on Poland's borders with Belarus and Russia. The German Chancellor has said Europe cannot rely on US support to counter Russia as Moscow continues to breach NATO countries' airspace. This starts next April. German soldiers digging trenches on the Russian border with Poland. So, let's just recap, shall we? Point one, head of MI6 says that the front line is everywhere in the fight against Russia. Point two, the head of the defence staff, the chief of the defence staff, says that Putin's war in Ukraine shows his willingness to target neighbouring states, including NATO allies, our allies. Point three, the Germans are digging trenches and building anti-tank barriers on the Polish border with Russia. And here we are. Wondering why it's still not landing in the way that it should. And in the way that people like Bill Browder, who is now, thankfully, very, very, very commonly found appearing on the UK media, but wasn't when he first came onto this show. I think he was on with Lewis Goodall yesterday. Warning about what was going to happen. In its simplest terms, the only way Putin gets to hold on to all the money that he's stolen, which is a sum of money that is quite possibly in excess of even Elon Musk's fortune. But the only way in which Vladimir Putin gets to hold on to all the money that he's stolen is by destabilizing the West and keeping his own population in a state of perpetual war. That's it. It's that simple. I will be taking no further questions. So, if you're my age, or a little bit younger, but certainly if you're older, you grew up with Russia being our sworn enemy. You grew up with the threat of the Cold War. When we did When the Wind Blows, that wonderful Raymond Briggs animation with that incredibly haunting theme tune by David Bowie, it was the Russians that were going to drop nuclear bombs on us. If you remember, and I'm a bit too young for this, the Bay of Pigs, it was the Russians that were threatening Western democracy. If you move into the realms of fiction, when it wasn't Smersh or Spectre, it was the Russians that James Bond was fighting against. It was always the Russians that were the sworn enemy of the West, of Western values, right up to and including Rocky IV. It was a Russian that Rocky had to finally... Was it Rocky IV or Rocky III? Rocky III, I think. So, I grew up in a world where absolutely everybody was aware of the threat that Russia posed to peace. The four-minute warning. The Cold War. Nuclear proliferation. And then along came Gorbachev. Glasnost. Perestroika. And the end of history, as Francis Fukuyama, the historian, called it. Because when the Cold War was over, the liberal democratic model had prevailed. I guess, you know, you'd have to sort of ignore the existence of China for that to hold. But people managed to do that. And yet here we are now in 2025, nearly in 2026, and those three things are true. The head of MI6 is describing Russia as already being at war with us. The chief of the defense staff is describing the very real possibility of Vladimir Putin invading one of our NATO allies, a NATO country. The Germans are digging trenches on Poland's borders. And Donald Trump, the leader of the, quotes, free world, end quotes, might as well be, if he isn't, he might as well be in Vladimir Putin's pocket. Just think of those four facts and tell me how this happened. 03456060973. In the space of my 53 years on this earth, we have gone from understanding that Russia was the biggest threat to our way of life on this planet, to acknowledging that it wasn't anymore, to failing to notice that it is again. How has this happened? It was Rocky IV, of course. Two tribes! Alan! Two tribes! When two tribes go to war, one is all that you can score. Frankie Goes to Hollywood's famous contribution to military history, not to mention Sting. In Europe and America, you remember Sting? Russians? But Russians! He sang about Russians! He didn't sing, he sang about Russians because that was the yin to our yang, the pole, the opposite pole. Russia was the massive threat to our interests. And that was the Soviet Union. And Putin is in thrall to the legacy. So, how has this happened? And stop and think about this, all right? Or ring me now if you've already got a view. But the question I'm asking is quite acute. We live in a country whose leaders, military and espionage, security, military and security, think that Russia poses an enormous threat to our safety. I'll say that again. We live in a country whose military and security masterminds believe that Russia poses a serious threat to our country. The absolute experts, the people at the very top of the highest tree when it comes to our military capability and our security services, the absolute dons, the most qualified people in the entire country, believe with a hell of a lot of evidence that Russia poses an almost unprecedented threat to our security. I'll say that again. The most qualified people in the country. Question. Why aren't we more worried? 0345 6060 973. In some ways, the best person to answer this question is somebody who is worried. Someone who's been paying a little bit more attention than the rest of us. But who is that person? Apart from Bill Browder, and to a lesser extent, since I met him, me. And Carol Cadwallader, and a few other people who were routinely maligned by the sort of journalist who turned up for the launch of the Conservative Friends of Russia party. Why? When the most qualified people in the country, when the biggest experts in the land of experts are united in their view, when the Germans are digging trenches on the Russian border with Poland, why are we not more worried? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. Stop sending me Rocky IV. It was Rocky Blummin' IV. I'm trying to do high-level international current affairs analysis. And all you're picking me up on is the fact that I got my Rockies a bit mixed up. And in fact, I got it right the first time. I just didn't have full faith in myself. So, 21 minutes after 11 is the time. Question is really simple. Well, it's not simple at all, is it? The question is simple. What is the answer? Now that all of the planets are aligned, all of the biggest cheeses on this cheese board are all singing from the same hymn sheet. Be afraid, be very afraid of Vladimir Putin and Russia. Why are we not more concerned? Why are we not more alarmed? Why are we not more horrified by what we're being told by the people best qualified to tell us this stuff, by the people best qualified to know, all right? And I'll take any answer you've got. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. Any answer you've got at all, because let's knit a tapestry together. You don't knit tapestries. Let's make a patchwork quilt. But I need as many patches as possible to put the quilt together. So here it is. The best qualified people in the country. Absolutely clear that the threat posed to us by Russia is immense and real. Urgent. The Germans are digging trenches on the Polish border with Russia. Why are we not more concerned? Hit the numbers now, you will get through.
LBC.
My beans have been to Mexico. They once went to Peru. My beans, they flew to Portugal, then went to Tuvalu. My beans were with me in Italy, then came with me to Greece. I slurped their sauce on Spanish shores. I nibbled them in Nice. My Heinz beans have seen the world. They've traveled far and wide because they are, as we all know, too good to leave behind.
Okay, let me stop you there, sir. You still have to check them into the hold.
Oh, all right then. Honestly.
Beans means Heinz.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Christmas, my love.
Merry Christmas, Mum.
Merry Christmas, Nanny.
Happy New Year!
From the UK's first mobile phone call to the first text, we've been connecting you at Christmas since 1984 on Vodafone, the nation's network. The nation's network, Vodafone UK, supporting the nation since 1984. Learn more at vodafone.co.uk/TNN.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
23 minutes after 11. I didn't do these in my younger days on this programme because I never really did topics that nobody else did because I thought there's a reason why nobody else does them. But on this occasion, it's part of the answer to the question, isn't it? Why aren't we more concerned about the head of our armed forces and the head of our security services describing Russia as a real and present danger to our interests? And if that hasn't got you worried enough, the Germans are building trenches, digging trenches and building anti-tank barriers on Poland's borders with Belarus and Russia. I've got a list here of some of the people that attended that conservative Friends of Russia event in August of 2012. It's actually in my last book. And I'll share that with you now before we go to the phones, because it may be part of the answer. Someone called Carrie Simmons was there. I don't know if you're familiar with her. You may know her better as Carrie Johnson, because she married Boris Johnson, who, of course, popped in to see a former KGB spy on his way back from a NATO summit where they'd actually been talking about the attempts to murder the Skripals on British soil. He was Foreign Secretary then. We made him Prime Minister. Dominic Cummings was there. He was at the Conservative Friends of Russia party in August of 2012. Matthew Elliott was there, head of Vote Leave, someone I think Boris Johnson has put in the House of Lords. The Russian ambassador was there. That's a bit of a given, given that the party took place in his garden. And various other MPs were there as well. I don't know whether that's part of the answer to the question of why we are today not more shocked, not more worried, not more alarmed by the position that Russia occupies on the list of threats to the West. Spoiler alert, it's right at the top. Mark's in County Durham. Mark, what would you like to say?
Hi, just a little bit of context. I mean, I'm a little bit older than you, not much, but I was in the British Army on the Rhine against the Warsaw Pact.
Okay.
And we were taught they were the enemy. I've still got in the loft books about Warsaw Pact vehicles. And I think we took our eye off the ball a little bit.
Well, the ball disappeared, didn't it, with Glasnost and Perestroika the fall of the Berlin Wall. Let's not forget that. That was the end of the Warsaw Pact. Yes.
I was there when that happened. It's a bit of a sort of thing. My father was there when it went up in the army.
Wow.
So we've got a long history of this. However, it's the KGB or the FSB. He is ex-KGB Putin, and they are well known for playing the long game. And I think this has been going on for 10 years. I think they've been infiltrating. The Wagner Group was running
I don't know.
In St. Petersburg. If you listen to the rest, it's classified. They've discussed the Wagner Group and Putin actually running factories and advertising for people to do basically hybrid warfare on the internet against the West.
Does the language not help? Because you say hybrid warfare and people tune out a bit. They don't know what it means. And if you talk about, as I used to talk about, Auntie Doris's Facebook page, and some of the people on it will be real, but if your social media feed, and it's even worse now with the white supremacism and the Nazism on what used to be Twitter. If your social media feed is filling up with things that are opposed to the national interest or attacking your own country or your own capital city, why do people not pause and wonder why that's happening?
Because they've been led to believe migrants are the cause of the problem. I think more recently, but in the past it was like the cost of defence. Have you ever read any parts of the MacMafia book?
No, I haven't. I know that I should have done. I've got it at home. It's on my desk.
Well, in the MacMafia book, he lists all these, the collapse of the Soviet Union, how all these people got money, oligarchs and everything, and Putin and
so let's pause. Let's just pick them off one by one, because you're doing what I do. You're jumping around too much.
Yeah.
So the question is, you cannot now dismiss the threat as Russophobia or Putin derangement syndrome or whatever the usual idiots might call it. You've got the head of MI6 and you've got the head of our armed forces essentially singing from identical hymn sheets when it comes not to the threat that Putin poses, but the war he is already engaged in against our interests. The most obvious front in that war is what you could call hybrid warfare or cyber attacks or indeed misinformation, disinformation, getting British people up to and including members of parliament, most obviously one who routinely praises Putin or talks about how he's the politician I admire most in the world. You get these people into powerful positions. They perpetrate the rhetoric you've described. They're persuading everybody to be terrified of immigrants. Quick, look over there. There's a boat crossing the channel. Don't look over there. Russia's just persuaded your Uncle Keith to vote to leave the European Union or whatever it might be. And you pay attention to this, given your past.
Definitely. I mean, I would class myself a bit of an amateur historian, and what is now classed as history, I lived through some of it. And the thing is,
the average Joe, what happened? Because in the 80s, they were all aware of the threat that Russia posed. In 2025, they're not.
We've reduced our contact with, I think part of it is reduced our contact with the armed forces and things like that. There's less people in the armed forces, less connect with the armed forces.
But does the average squaddy
think... people who are defending us.
Does the average squaddy think that Russia is priority number one?
I don't know anymore,
and if they don't...
The only thing I can say is my son has recently left, and he worked for I can't explain where he worked for.
Okay. Well, you can, but you'd have to kill me.
Yes. No, seriously, he worked in somewhere in... Okay. Wales.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
And they were certainly watching a multitude of threats, including Russia.
So, and then, this is the question, Mark. Thank you for that. And what an extraordinary family story as well. Three generations, at least. They're the only ones you told us about. Possibly your great-grandfather was in the Boer War. But the idea that your dad was there when the Berlin Wall went up and you were there when it came down again, that's incredible, isn't it? There's a moment to note. But what, I'm thinking about the average punter. Me, you. Not Mark. He's got military service. He's got a family history. The average. Who would you need? What would an alarm bell look like? No, that's a silly question. What would it sound like? What would an effective alarm bell sound like? Right. So here is Vladimir Putin. We pressed this alarm bell on this program, 10 years ago? When did Bill first come on the program? I think it was about 10 years ago, and he just explained it in such wonderful fashion that you couldn't not appreciate the threat. And he used to point out to me the people in British life who were so addicted to the teat of Russian money, the teat of stolen Russian money, that they couldn't stop suckling on it, and explaining to me how that was going to cause problems for the future. But that alarm bell wasn't loud enough. You know, they were still having parties in the Russian ambassador's garden in 2012, 2 years into David Cameron's premiership. And then you had the invasion of Ukraine. And you had British politicians. I mean, one of them's in prison now for taking bribes from a Kremlin stooge. But you had British politicians talking about poking the Russian bear, essentially just parrot fashioning Kremlin propaganda. British politicians were doing it. So you can't blame your Auntie Doris or your Uncle Keith for sucking up this stuff from social media. And of course, the propaganda that they punt isn't about Russia. They're not filling up your Facebook feed with, God bless Vladimir Putin, or Russians are ace, full stop. They're filling up your social media feed with, oh, look, hate them over there. Aren't they awful? By the way, why don't you vote to leave the most successful single market in the history of humanity? Oh, and by the way, your capital city is awful. London's terrible. You can't go to London. You'd be much safer in, St. Petersburg. That's part of the problem, isn't it? The propaganda isn't about our enemy. It's not telling us that they're wonderful. It's not like 1984. The propaganda is about ourselves. So when I sit here today and tell you that the most senior members of the military and the security services are telling us we're already at war with Russia, and I say, why aren't you more worried? You say, well, I'm more worried about Muslims. I'm more worried about not being able to go to London because it's full of Shakira law. I'm more worried about Keir Starmer. There's an incredible story in one of the newspapers about 1.2 billion people watching entirely made up AI news footage. Why are we not hearing the alarm that's going off? answer because we've been persuaded by social media to be a lot more worried about other largely non-existent threats. Game, set and match to Vladimir Putin. Here's Thomas Watts with the headlines.
The family of a man who overpowered one of the Bondi Beach gunmen has been called a hero of Australia by his family. 15 people were killed before Ahmed Al-Ahmed tackled one of the attackers in Sydney. Police are investigating what they've called the apparent homicide of the Hollywood director Rob Reiner. The bodies of the 78-year-old and his wife Michelle were found inside their home in Los Angeles yesterday. The British Medical Association is set to reveal whether this week's doctors' strike in England will go ahead. Medics have been voting on a new offer from the government, including an expansion of training places. LBC weather, heavy rain across northern England, Wales and the West Country. Dry elsewhere with some sunny spells in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC.
Take the world's best snooker players.
One of the most unpredictable seasons.
Add the electric atmosphere of Alexandra Palace.
It can only be
the 2026
Johnston's Paint Masters.
Could it be Sean Murphy,
Judd Trump,
Neil Robertson,
or world champion
Xiaozing Tong,
who takes the trophy?
One thing's certain.
Nothing beats the Johnston's Paint Masters.
Live.
Enjoy our biggest ever fan zone.
Watch in style.
From VIP sofas.
Book now.
WST.TV/tickets.
Merry Christmas, my love.
Merry Christmas, Mum.
Merry Christmas, Nanny.
Happy New Year!
From the UK's first mobile phone call to the first text, we've been connecting you at Christmas since 1984 on Vodafone, the nation's network. The Nation's Network, Vodafone UK, supporting the nation since 1984. Learn more at vodafone.co.uk/TNN.
My beans have been to Mexico. They once went to Peru. My beans, they flew to Portugal, then went to Tuvalu. My beans were with me in Italy, then came with me to Greece. I slurped their sauce on Spanish shores. I nibbled them in Nice. My Heinz beans have seen the world. They've travelled far and wide because they are, as we all know, too good to leave behind.
Okay, let me stop you there, sir. You still have to check them into the hold.
Oh, all right then. Honestly.
Beans means Heinz.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
11:35 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I've mentioned Carol quite a lot on the programme lately, and she's been on as well, of course, but she dated it to about 2014 when the so-called information war against us was really hitting its stride. Disinformation and cyber tactics, like Cold War strategies, but amplified by social media to destabilise the West. Most obviously, by getting the United Kingdom to vote to leave the European Union and getting the United States to put, I don't know what you'd call him, an idiot or a useful idiot in the White House. Twice. And when she first started doing it, she was attacked, including by very prominent UK journalists like Andrew Neil, who was still working at the BBC at the time, despite not being allowed to have opinions. He called her a crazy cat lady and never apologised. Still hasn't apologised. And now the head of MI6 and the head of our military, the chief of defence staff, are essentially saying the same thing. And to be fair to them, they've been saying similar things for a while. And we're all just sitting here, opening our advent calendar and getting cross about small boats and putting Nigel Farage, a man who couldn't have been more outspoken in his admiration of Vladimir Putin, at the top of our opinion polls. A man whose close friend, protege, party leader in Wales, is currently in prison for taking bribes from a Kremlin stooge. So why are we not hearing the alarm bells? 0345 6060 973. And what would an effective alarm bell sound like? What would make the British public look up to see this threat, to acknowledge, to recognise this threat? Because if the head of the army, if the head of the defence staff and the head of MI6 aren't enough, what the hell is? Sam's in Penge. Sam, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I'd just like to give a bit of backstory as to why I'm calling in my points especially.
Okay.
So my dad grew up under Yugoslavian Iron Curtain, if that makes sense.
Yes, of course it does.
Growing up in that time, he was a student protester in the 80s in Pristina in Kosovo, wow. fighting against, you know, the ethnic cleansing and all that kind of stuff that went on in the Balkans in the 90s. Kosovo isn't a special case, unfortunately, but so my dad grew up in that period, and he's always warned us about propaganda, how it's used, who uses it, why they use it. But he's now in his 60s. He's very politicized. And he falls for the exact propaganda he warned us about once upon a time.
Oh, wow.
He is convinced guys like Putin and Trump and Xi Jinping, they are the forefront, they are the front runners of everything. They are going to put the world to rights because wow. all these other politicians, they're not doing it. Similar like we've got in this country. For 14 years, everybody saw how downtrodden, what austerity done to us, how poor the poorer got and how rich the richer got. We all understand exactly the system that we had in place for 14 years. But the media will still try and convince us that these guys that are in now are worse than what we've had for 14 years.
Yeah. And so just remind me why that's relevant to the conversation that we're having. Because, I mean, you know, I bow to nobody in my disdain for right-wing media, but they're not in the pocket of the Kremlin like Nigel Farage's mate Nathan Gill was.
It's when you see the exact same kind of propaganda that was troped out in the 70s and the 80s, in the Balkans especially, you know, like the third-rate citizen is the ethnic minority. It's not the guy who's the same as the one who's in power.
They're trying to take over. You can't be brown and British. You know, all of these lines that have their roots in social media. The problem is that because you'll be able to find some Herbert who will say it publicly and who is not Russian, people don't believe that a lot of this has its roots in the misinformation warfare. The stuff that people believe, just the attacks on London would be a good example, I think, Sam. Just the way that you now have British people joining in attacks on their own capital city without thinking, hang on a minute.
And a lot of them haven't even been to London.
I've grown up
in South London. I've grown up in South East London. Exactly where I grew up was the part of the roughest part of London, England, what have you. It was Stab Central, unfortunately.
Yes.
But the complete turnaround that South East London has.
It's much better now. Yeah, I know. It's insane. And what alarm bell would work then? I mean, because if your dad can't hear it today, what on earth would he hear? Would it involve Russia crossing into a NATO country? Because then you'd have people like Farage saying, well, you shouldn't poke the Russian bear, and Donald Trump saying, oh, I've ended that war, even as people carry on killing each other.
I come originally from Kosovo. My heritage is Kosovan. And my dad, if you was to hear him speak about how the Palestinians are being treated in Gaza and stuff, you'd completely forget that his people have been through the exact same thing. So while I do support Israel, I do support the Jewish state because...
Of course.
The people that have lived before, all of the people that live now, they suffered for millennia. We've been hearing about it all morning.
Yeah, in the first hour.
But the propaganda tells us that guys like Keir Starmer is out there to punish the Jews, even though his wife's Jewish and his kids are Jewish. I remember a few months back they was trying to tell us that, oh, Keir Starmer doesn't have the best intentions for Jewish children in Jewish schools.
And Farage did that yesterday, I think, talking about... I saw a tweet about the Muslim Brotherhood. I didn't check the date, so maybe it wasn't actually yesterday, but... it cuts both ways. And you get that from the left as well, some of what you describe. But in terms of the threat that Russia poses, maybe that's the only answer, Sam. It is just we're all too busy getting infuriated, incorrectly infuriated by other things, many of which we have been manipulated into. I mean, there's a story a couple of weeks ago. Thank you, Sam. I'm sorry to hear about your dad. And I wonder what would sort of work and make him realise that the threats we face today are the same in some ways as the threats that he grew up resisting, even though he's effectively, under your own account, changed sides. Maybe this will help. This is from Carolina. Listen to this. Many people in the UK take freedom for granted and have never directly experienced the cruelty of Russia. I am Polish, and for me, the war did not truly end until 1989, when communism finally collapsed. Members of my family were arrested and terrorized by the communist regime, with my aunt imprisoned in Siberia until 1955. My nation has been reduced to a stereotype of alcohol-loving, uneducated peasants, a reputation widely spread across the Western world. The power of Russian propaganda and its ability to manipulate on a mass scale should never be underestimated. Well, it is, as you know, Carolina, horribly underestimated. And what if they just realised way before the rest of us did the power that social media could have to persuade populations. You wouldn't even need to leave Russia. You wouldn't need to hit us because you could persuade us to hit ourselves. That's it. Got there. Got there a bit early, actually. It's not even 11:45 yet. We wouldn't need to hit them because we will persuade them to hit themselves. What have they done now? They voted to leave the European Union. I don't want to indulge in stereotypes, but vodka's all round on that one. What have they done now? They've put Donald Trump in the White House. What have they done now? Nigel Farage is leading the opinion polls in the United Kingdom. What have they done now? The far right's on the march in Germany and France and elsewhere. Why? Oh, they really hate those foreigners. What about us? Do they ever think about us? Do they ever talk about us? No, never. Never. And when they do, Andrew Neil calls them crazy cat lady. He's great. We don't have to hit them because we've persuaded them to spend every day waking up and punching themselves in the face. And the people who warn about the dangers, the people who know what's going on, they attack them. They punch them even harder than they punch themselves every morning. So I sit here glibly wondering, why are we not hearing these alarm bells? The head of MI6, the chief of the defence staff. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Not worried about the Russians. I'm just worried about the woke liberati. That's the real threat. Who do you think invented the woke liberati? Someone who has Western interests at heart or someone who doesn't? Seriously. That's a rhetorical question, right? What are you really, really worried about? Threats to world peace posed by Vladimir Putin and a resurgent Soviet Union in all but name? Or, I don't know, gender-neutral toilets? The woke mob. What are you more worried about? Who do you think invented the woke mob? Where do you think it came from? Just a question. I'm just asking questions. It's 11:45.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
They merely went to celebrate Hanukkah. Hundreds of members of the Jewish community in Bondi in Australia gathering on the beach for the annual event. It's called Hanukkah by the Sea. When this happened.
Oh my God.
Two gunmen opened fire. Tommy is, I think, initially from the UK. Now you live on Bondi. Tell us how it unfolded.
You can imagine, like, a really busy day, Sunday, at Bondi Beach, and all of a sudden, within a click of the fingers, hundreds of people charging towards us from the beach. People are screaming, there's shooters. I ran in the direction of the gunshots. It was literally a carnage scene.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia, and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Back the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, tap up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. A safe trip begins with...
Think. Do the 4 trip checks before every long journey. National Highways.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
11:48 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I said obvious answers welcome, as well as more complicated ones. This is from Anthony. You may as well be talking about climate change, James. What am I supposed to do about it? Well, just recognise the threat. That's all. Head of MI6, I mean, it's a great parallel, isn't it? All of the qualified people with regard to climate science have been shouting from the rooftops about the threats that we face, the imminent disasters, the actual disasters. Now you've got the head of MI6 and the head of the defence staff warning about the fact that we're essentially already at war with Russia. But what alarm bell would you hear? Akhil says it's because we're an Insta generation. Everyone's too busy doom-scrolling to have any time to take notice until it bites them in the bum. But even when it bites you on the bum, Akhil, would you know it was Russia? Would you know that that was what was going on here? They're two beautifully British responses, aren't they? They're so understated. What am I supposed to do about it, says Anthony. And wait until it bites me on the bum, says Akhil. I love that. That's so sort of... maybe that's part of the problem, is that we're too chill about everything. We're too relaxed. Okay, are you relaxed about this? Trump's MAGA allies cultivate resistance efforts in Europe. Resistance efforts in Europe. So the real enemy is immigrants, right? That's the argument that's coming out of Trump now. There is a classified version of his national security strategy that the Times reported on Friday. And listen, the article itself is replete with coulds and maybes, but... Four more countries. The Trump administration wants to persuade four more countries to leave the European Union. According to reports of a classified version of the US national security strategy. Why? Why would Donald Trump be interested in further destabilizing Europe? Answer. Yeah, well, you can possibly work it out for yourself. And then you've got page 14 of the Telegraph today. And of course, unhinged headlines are bread and butter on this programme. You've got a writer called Tim Stanley writing, "Neurotic Europe needs saving from itself." Again, a line that could have come absolutely complete from the Kremlin. Europe needs saving for itself. Neurotic Europe. What's the word the Nazis used? What was the word? Degenerate. You might as well have said degenerate. Degenerate Europe needs saving from itself, says Vladimir Putin. Sorry, Daily Telegraph columnist Tim Stanley. Trump's MAGA allies cultivate resistance efforts in Europe. And if you think, yeah, maybe, James, but, you know, come on. This from Brendan. Very recently, James, everything that you've been warning us about would have sounded like a crazy conspiracy theory. And sadly, to some, it still will. But the scary part is that it's now all so obvious. So if you think, I'm not there yet, I mean, why on earth would anybody be involved? Because Trump is the key here to understanding the new level of threat, I think. How about this? Andrew Tate appeared to suggest that the Trump administration helped him and his brother to flee Romania in leaked texts. This is also from the Telegraph at the end of last week. Tate hints at Trump role in aiding his escape. Why on earth would a uniquely divisive, self-described misogynist and alleged people trafficker and serial sex offender be somebody that Donald Trump wanted to protect or look after? Well, because destabilisation and division, misinformation and disinformation are the name of the game. You'll remember that Tate is the character Nigel Farage relied upon for his, quotes, information and evidence, end quotes, in the aftermath of the Southport killings. Ah, man, am I sounding tinfoil hat? Am I? Well, here's the head of MI6 and the head of the British Armed Forces warning about the same threats, albeit without necessarily the detail that I am speculating upon this morning. George is in Southend. George, what do you reckon?
Hello, James. Hello, George. Let me give you an alarm bell call again, yes. If you needed another one. Not only are the Germans building trenches in Poland, they're actually refurbishing their own bomb shelters from World War II. But nobody's likely to report that in the Daily Mail, are they?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I hate the Daily Mail and all it and all it stands for, but they probably would actually report that very specific example. Do you know what they did on Saturday?
Go on.
Did my voice go high enough there, George, or shall I turn it up one more octave? I'll go up one more. Do you know what they did? Get in the back of the van! They complained about all the Polish people leaving.
Today?
Yes! Yes! In the Daily Mail! They complained. Now, find me the article, because people will think I'm making this up. The Daily Mail complained about all the Polish people leaving. So they spent 10 years going, just clear off, will you? Go on, naff off, get out of here, you Polish people. Go away, go away, go away. And then this weekend they went, oh, this is outrageous. Does anything speak of our national decline more than the fact that all the Polish people that we ordered to leave for 10 years have left? So it could easily appear in the Daily Mail, but that's not really the point. The point is, Germany's alive to it, Germany's awake to it, Poland appears to be awake to it, albeit that they're on the list of countries that Trump thinks they can get out of the EU. Why aren't we? Why aren't we more concerned?
Because we were not invaded, and the countries who were have that lived experience, and they know the realities that... You know, what we take for granted is actually much more fragile than we realise.
But we weren't invaded. That was still true when we were quite rightly spooked by Russia, when we were spooked by the Soviet Union, where we were worried about nuclear obliteration, weren't we? We hadn't been invaded then either.
No, but I want to pick up on a point your military man said a while ago about this being in the making for about 10 years.
Yes.
I would say it's been longer than that. Let you into a little conversation with a friend of mine way back in the mid-80s. And I said that we're going to find in the future that China will actually be beating the West, not militarily in the first instance, but economically. We'll be driving Chinese cars. And my friend stopped me and said, oh, don't make me laugh.
Yeah.
Because at that time, China didn't even have one car company. That was commercial in a global sense. So he said, where did you get that from? And it was by a guy called Deng Xiaoping, who had this 50-year plan, because the Chinese...
We've got 50-day plans in this country, haven't we?
Yes, and that's the problem.
And Russia's more like the 50-year than the 50-day.
Well, one of the things he said is we will take back Hong Kong, because it was under lease at that time.
Yeah.
We will use it as an economic springboard. And he says the way to beat the capitalists is not through the Soviet way. We will be better capitalists than they are. We will dominate them economically and then militarily. And it's all come to pass.
Well, the militarily bit hasn't yet, but I mean, I don't know who would bet against it. And to add to your powers of prophecy, of course, Trump is talking about... setting up a new elite C5 in sort of opposition to the G7. So the core five would inevitably contain the countries that he rather likes the look of, like Russia or China. He's publicly mused about them joining the G7. So the world order, it's so mad, isn't it? Again, you get the, whether it comes from the Kremlin or not, the propaganda talking about the new world order or the great replacement theory. Whereas the people we've actually elected, in the case of the United States and one or two European countries, are the ones that are most engaged in the complete dismantling of the post-war peace. Thank you, George. I'm moving on because I want to hear at least one more voice, hopefully two. Andy's in Colchester. Andy, what's going on?
Hi, James. I haven't got a clue, mate. But you asked the question, why are we not more concerned about... I mean, from my humble opinion, and I'll say I'm not a military expert, I'm a postie, what do I know?
I don't say that. You're as qualified as anybody else. You're certainly as qualified as any Daily Telegraph columnist is to comment on this stuff.
Well, yeah, thank you. But, I mean...
It wasn't a compliment.
I'll take it as a back, anyone.
Yeah, no, do. Take it as a compliment. Yeah. Sorry, carry on.
So I'm 39, so I grew up in the 90s and... I hit my maturity in like the early 2000s.
Yes.
My opinion is, I don't think my generation, the millennials and especially Gen Zs, and we haven't had that genuine fear of a real bad guy.
No.
I mean, I sort of semi-study history. I mean, sure. Throughout all of history, Britain, the UK, we have always had a very, very real threat from someone.
The Spanish, the French, the Germans, the Russians.
Yeah, but to put it in perspective, the Falklands War.
Yeah.
The Falklands War, that was the first time in all of history when we could have sent the Royal Navy en masse and we didn't have to worry about protecting trade. So we haven't really, Russia has always been that moustache twirling bad guy in the past, but yeah. they come from the dirty 70s and 80s, but in the 90s and the early 2000s, we had to go lucky UK. But what I don't understand is I was having a conversation with someone the other day and they were saying, oh, Russia's this. I went, but you know, they've invaded a sovereign country, right?
Yeah.
So my personal opinion is I don't think we've been very lucky in this period of history where the UK, we've been the UK. We've been this little bastion of an island in the EU, not anymore. But we haven't had a real bad guy knocking on our door.
But that's an opportunity. So Russia has turned somehow. We are our own bad guy now. So it's all about the woke mob, or it's all about immigrants or small boats. They must sit there. You said twirling their moustaches. It doesn't come close. What are they doing now? They're attacking each other. There's a bloke in the Daily Telegraph this morning, Vladimir, who says that Europe, neurotic Europe, needs saving from itself, and they can't believe their luck. Or no, not luck, because there's nothing lucky about it. They can't believe the scale of their success and the fact that there's been next to no pushback at all.
I genuinely think we've slipped timelines. Like, we're in an episode of The Sliders, because can you imagine talking to an American from Ronald's era and going,
no.
your president, by the way, is... He's mates with Putin.
Yeah. Or Thatcher's era, and saying, oh, by the way, your party's losing in the opinion polls to somebody who loves Vladimir Putin. And she'd say, bloody Labour. I said, no, it's not Labour, Margaret. It's someone even further to the right of you.
But that, I mean, I read, for my shame, I read a lot of 2000 AD.
Oh,
back in the day...
I am the law.
Yeah, the sods, they were the bad guys. They're still the bad guys, because back in the 70s and the 80s, they were a real, real bad threat. But now, can you imagine talking to someone from 1978 and going, oh, by the way, we're kind of sort of pseudo-friends with Russia. I mean, they're doing some really bad stuff, but they're also a threat to us, but we're also friends.
Well, no, I mean, we're not, are we? You're not,
no.
I'm not. Our government isn't, although they could have gone further. At least they didn't start hobnobbing in the Russian ambassador's garden in 2012, along with Boris Johnson's future wife. But the... and Dominic Cummings and Matthew Elliott, who went on to set up Vote Leave. But the idea that the... what would you call it? The narrative, the environment, the ecosystem of the 80s and the 90s. To revisit that and tell them that Russia is back with a vengeance, post-Glasnost, the Soviet Union is back on the march, and our politics is full of right-wing people who are shilling for them, who are taking bribes from them, who are championing them and repeating their propaganda in our parliaments, both European and domestic. Andy's absolutely right. You would simply not believe it.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, vigils have been held at Hanukkah events across the world after the terror attack on Bondi Beach in Sydney. The gunman, a father and son, targeted a party marking the first night of the Jewish festival. 15 people were killed, with dozens more wounded. Rabbi Mendy Lent knew one of the victims, London-born Rabbi Eli Schlanger.
Eli was really very full of life and energy and positivity. I spent some time in Australia studying 20 years ago, and he was there at the same time. Always had a big smile. He had like an infectious love for people and really spread. He just brought positivity into the room wherever he was.
Australia's Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, has promised to push for tougher gun laws following the attack.
What we saw yesterday was an act of pure evil, an act of terror, an act of anti-Semitism, an attack on the first day of Hanukkah targeted at the Jewish community.
Police forces across the UK say they are increasing their visibility among Jewish communities over Hanukkah. Authorities in Los Angeles are investigating the deaths of the Hollywood director Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle. Their bodies were found at their home yesterday in what is being treated by police as an apparent homicide. Reiner is best known for films including When Harry Met Sally, Stand By Me and The Princess Bride. The Foreign Secretary has condemned the verdict handed down to pro-democracy campaigner Jimmy Lai in Hong Kong. The British national has been found guilty of national security offences. Mr. Lai's family has urged Yvette Cooper to do more to press Beijing for his release. Reform UK has promised to cut the number of civil servants by 68,500 if it wins the next election. The party says the radical changes would save the taxpayer £5.2 billion a year. And forecasters say heavy rain could lead to flooding in South Wales today. An amber weather warning indicating a risk to life is in force until 9 o'clock tonight. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 97.35. That's up 86. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 13. LBC weather, that heavy rain persisting across Wales, parts of the West Country and Northern England, drier elsewhere with some sunny spells developing in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Hey, Harry. Hello, mate. Any tips for the game?
If it's games you want, your best bet is to check out Bet Victor's Casino Games. They've got more games than you've had hot dinners. In fact, they've got more games than Las Vegas Gaming Convention's annual convention of games.
Lots of games. Got it.
Yep, there's over 4,000 slot games, including all your favourites like Big Bass Bonanza, live casino tables like roulette and blackjack, and casino games like Crazy Time.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on Bet Victor Casino. 18+ gamblerware.org.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 12 and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Thank you for that. Two extraordinary hours of radio. I think I'm allowed to say that because I am both a contributor to this programme and a listener, of course. But both of them were a little bit out there, as in the approaches that we took. But thank you for justifying both the approaches and indeed the decision. I don't know quite how this one's going to go. I don't think we've done it. We haven't done it for a very long time. The last time we did it, I got invited to visit, and I never did. I never got around to it. When did you first hear the word Freemason? In what context was it? How far is the gap between you hearing the word Freemason and you hearing the phrase funny handshakes? Or, on a more serious note, corruption? I think the only time, and you'll correct me on this because you're weird like that, the only time I've ever come on air, I can only vaguely remember this, I've come on air and started a topic and then there's been an incredibly frenzied phone call from upstairs saying, stop, 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 stop. And it was oddly, because that fits in with all the conspiracy theories, but we had, my producer at the time and myself had not properly clocked that there was a big, big court case unfolding in which allegations related to membership of the Freemasons were a crucial part. So in terms of contempt of court, it would have been too risky for us to go ahead. I think my producer at the time had missed the meeting in which everyone else had been warned not to go near any topic at all related to this until this particular trial was over, at which point it was open season. Anybody could do it. I think that's the only time I've ever started off an introduction and then I had to change course. I can't even remember it fully. It'd probably be up on the archive somewhere. And I think Dad talked to me a bit about it. Dad was a journalist in the Midlands in the 80s and 90s and the 70s, actually. And he did a lot of work on West... Do you remember West... You probably don't. West Midlands Serious Crime Squad were a byword for scandal and corruption at one point. And I remember Dad talking to me, or alluding to, the Freemasons, and the fact that as a Catholic he wouldn't be allowed to join. I don't know if that's still true. That's two things you can't do if you're a Catholic. You can't be king. I don't think you can be Lord Chancellor. I think you can be Prime Minister if you're a Catholic, but I don't think you can be Lord Chancellor. Someone will check. And I didn't, and certainly it used to be the case that you're not allowed to join the Freemasons either. It may be a less serious angle that you want to take, but I want to know two things. I want to know, where does all of the, What's the word we want? Where does all of the myth? Well, no, because it might not be mythology. Mystique. Where does it come from? What is it? The history. The mystery. The history and mystery of the Freemasons. What are they? I mean, you might be listening to this not knowing what they are. I don't really know what they are. It's a secret organisation, which automatically makes you suspicious. But then they'll say, all we do is roll our trouser leg up and raise funds for orphanages. And you go, well, that sounds fine. Why do you roll your trouser leg up? I don't know. Men are weird. I know that women can join the Freemasons now, but I bet they don't go in for the. How are we going to do this phone-in? I walk past their Grand Lodge. Even the language is quite archaic. I think the words I'm going to use a lot this hour are history and mystery. It's a history mystery, or a mystery history of the Freemasons. I walk past their Grand Lodge all the time, most days, in fact, and it's a bit bonkers. I mean, if it appeared in a Hollywood film, you'd be unsurprised to discover that there was a nuclear bunker in the basement and a sort of evil genius. No, a mad genius presiding over some sort of master plan. But they lend themselves. They pop up in so many conspiracy theories that you can't help wondering whether can there be that much smoke without there being some fire. And then on a much more serious note, the reason why we're talking about it is that Metropolitan Police are to be ordered to tell their bosses if they are Freemasons. It kind of proves the point of many of the conspiracy theories. Because the most obvious one was that if you were a Mason and the arresting officer was a Mason, then you'd do the handshake and the arresting officer would, you know, oops, I've lost all the evidence. On you go, sir, and be more careful next time. That was always the image of the Freemasons in terms of corruption. The entry-level corruption was that a police officer who was in the Freemasons would let off a Freemason who was under arrest or who was not in the police service. And now the largest force in the country has said that anyone who is part or has been a member of a, quote, hierarchical organisation that requires members to support and protect each other, end quotes, must declare it. The body representing the Freemasons condemned the rule and said it would consider legal action. Right, this is 2025, all right? This is in the paper, I think, on Friday. I just didn't have time to get round to it. So when I started in this job 20 years or so ago, there were two things that were always presented to me as evidence of conspiracies that I would not be able to get my head around. One was something called the Bilderberg Group, which is supremely unsinister, but is real. And the other was the Freemasons. And I adopted a similarly sceptical approach to both claims. I adopt generally sceptical approaches to most conspiracy theories, he says, having spent an hour explaining how the Russians really are manipulating us into acting against our own interests on a daily basis. But you don't have to take my word for that. You could listen to the head of MI6 and the head of the armed forces. So my position has always been, yeah, whatever. They're just like, I mean, you know, the Catholics have Catinians, although a lot of you are telling me that Catholics can join the Masons. I don't think you could back in the day. Or the Round Table. You know, groups of men, often sort of vaguely prominent local men, local men for local people who raise money for charity, and they have a lot of fun doing it with a few sort of rituals and speeches, and I don't know. I've never been invited to address the Masons. But maybe they do a bit of after-dinner speaking as well and all that kind of thing. And so my instinct was always, I think you're probably getting worked up about nothing. And then the Metropolitan Police announced, no, you really do have to reveal whether or not you are a member because we're worried about corruption. So there are conspiracy theorists, although they've probably moved on to other things more recently. They've probably moved on to COVID vaccines or to 5G phone masks or what are the big ones at the moment, or to the MMR jabs. But there are old school conspiracy theorists, people who were conspiracy theorists before it was cool, who will have been sitting there last week going, I told you! My wife left me because I kept going on about the Freemasons, and it turns out I was right all along. Ha! How do you explain why the Metropolitan Police is telling Freemasons to declare their membership of the Freemasons if they're not all the things that I've spent years telling you they were? The issue of Freemasons in the Met has been long running. previous commissioners didn't get very worked up about it. Did Nick ask Mark Rowley about this last week? He was in on for it. He did. We should probably have a listen to that, shouldn't we? The current Met Commissioner has been moved to act, A, because he really wants the force to be more trusted than it currently is, and B, perhaps, because a report into the murder of Daniel Morgan found that police corruption had hampered the hunt to find his killers, as you probably know already. We speak often to Daniel's brother, Alistair. But the inquiry's report, or one of the inquiry's 2021 report, said a source of recurring suspicion and mistrust in the investigations of Daniel Morgan's murder has been police officers' membership of the Freemasons. You get things like this. One detective in the murder investigation was a Freemason who later went to work with a prime suspect. 10 police officers who were prominent in the murder investigations were Freemasons. They also added in this report, the panel has not seen evidence that Masonic channels were corruptly used in connection with either the commission of the murder or to subvert the police investigation. So there are suspicions. There is not evidence. And there's support for Mark Rowley. He, apparently, the Met has held intelligence for years of potential corruption linked to personal relationships formed through membership of the Freemasons, but not proven. Commander Simon Messenger said, after such conclusive results, this is public perceptions of police impartiality, we've decided now is the right time to address long-standing concerns and that public and staff confidence must take precedence over the secrecy of any membership organisation. Our decision does not mean any member of staff cannot join the Freemasons or another similar organisation. It simply means that if you do, you have to disclose it. The head of the United Grand Lodge of England responded by saying, our values of integrity, friendship, respect and service are paramount in Freemasonry and have never been of more importance. We see this action as unwarranted and we are carefully considering an appropriate response. So, question number one is, what do they do? 0345 6060 973. Or to be more polite, what do you do? What do you do? What do you do as a Freemason? Just explain it to me and add whether or not you approve or disapprove of the Metropolitan Police demanding that any officers who are members disclose their membership to Sweet. All right? 0345 6060 973. Question number two. Where do all the perceptions of dodginess come from? Well, why do you feel that such huge swathes of the public are concerned about potential corruption being linked to Freemason membership? Two-thirds back the restriction because it affects public perception of police impartiality. So I don't know whether that means one-third of Met officers are in the Masons or whether there's something else going on. So question number one is, what do you actually do? And then question number two is, where does all of the what's the word I want? Like smoke. What would be a better word for smoke? Where does all history and mystery. Where does all the history and mystery come from? I told you that was going to be my favourite phrase this hour. So what do you actually do? Where does all the history and mystery come from? And then the most interesting question, or the question that I think the first two questions lead us towards, why would you not want to disclose your membership if there's nothing dodgy going on? That's a genuine question, by the way. It's not a nothing to hide, nothing to fear kind of position. It's just where I can't. I've got a fourth question as well, but it's a bit niche. Why would disclosing your membership be a problem if it is a completely harmless and uncorrupt organisation? 0345 6060 973. And then the fourth question, I think the Catholics say you can't join the Masons rather than the Masons saying that Catholics can't join. I think I may have got that a bit wrong, but I think that's what Dad told me back in the day. Because I think he was asked to join by a police officer and said that he couldn't because the Catholic Church, I mean, we've got our own organisations, thank you very much, we don't have to join one of yours. But the fourth question, and this one might be a little bit niche, all right? As I walk past the Grand Lodge, or whatever it's called, most days, and all of the pubs in the immediate environs of the Freemasons HQ are absolutely chock-a-block with blokes who are all dressed the same, who I'm 90% certain all work in that building. To which my question, and this is very neat, what on earth do you do all day? Seriously, you can't walk past the pub near Great Queen Street at lunchtime without encountering a few hundred of these chaps. Perhaps I exaggerate, but what do you do all day? What goes on behind those doors? I don't personally think it's anything sinister or weird. I'm just confused about what so many men get up to every single day. Is it? And then you see people sometimes at Holborn Station carrying their briefcases full of regalia. And what's that about? I just don't know anything about this. Let's have a bit of a, what's the word? Let's have a bit of an illumination. Oh, no, crikey, that sounds dodgy, doesn't it? That makes us think of the Illuminati. Let's just turn the lights on and find out what we see.
This is LBC.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
At Lidl, find wines you'll love this Christmas. Buy any three or more deluxe wines and get 30% off with Lidl Plus. Like our award-winning Barossa Valley Shiraz or Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc. Cheers to that. Lidl, more to value.
Be drink away 18 plus, subject to availability. Selected stores exclude Scotland and Wales. Selected bottles only. Ends 31st of the 12th. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/lptv.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirement for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
90 minutes after 12 is the time. Obviously, I've got no way of knowing if people ring in and tell me that they are Freemasons. I've got no way of knowing whether it's true or not. I'm not being funny now. I'm just pointing that out. So we'll take everything on trust, which is perhaps part of the problem. But before we get stuck into that, Simon will be first. Just a quick word on the passing of Rob Reiner. Still some mystery around exactly what has happened there. Police reportedly investigating a murder but not looking for anybody else after him and his wife, Rob Reiner and his wife, were found dead in their home. You may not know the name even, but you'll know the films. If I told you that he had made, I mean, just looking at the list, at least three of my all-time favourite films. Two films that are stone cold in my top ten. And then a third film that could have been, but five films that are arguably the finest example of films in that genre. So five films, five different genres. Right, I'll tell you what they are. Same director. This is incredible, this. It's like the Beatles of film directing. Stand By Me. Magnificent. The Princess Bride. Inconceivable. Didn't do that well when it first came out. It is one of the finest films ever made. It's close to perfect. In fact, it probably is perfect. Stand By Me, probably perfect. When Harry Met Sally, the perfect romantic comedy. Faultless. Iconic. Misery. Chilling. Perfect horror film. That's also Stephen King, isn't it? Stand By Me was a Stephen King short story as well, although the short story was called The Body. And then finally, A Few Good Men. I mean, it plays fast and loose with courtroom realities, but my goodness me. Ferrari used to play clips from A Few Good Men every other day on the programme. That's only going back a few years. That's how iconic A Few Good Men was. You can't handle the truth, Jack Nicholson. So that's five films there that are inarguably brilliant and arguably the finest example of their genre ever made. He did it in 5 years. He made Stand By Me in 1986, The Princess Bride in 1987, When Harry Met Sally in 1990, in 1989, Misery in 1990, and A Few Good Men in 1992. So over a 6-year period, he made five of the finest films ever made, the best ever coming-of-age drama, the best ever fantasy adventure story, the best ever romantic comedy, the best ever psychological horror, and the best ever courtroom drama. One director. I just thought we should mention that. And I haven't even mentioned Spinal Tap. And there'd probably be two, maybe three other films that you'll now be cross with me for not mentioning. But Spinal Tap, probably top of the list. The best ever, what would you call it? Rockumentary? The best ever spoof. Mad, imagine that. You'd be happy if you'd made one of those films. It is 22 minutes after 12. Back to the Freemasons. Simon is in Shrewsbury, and, well, you can answer whatever questions you want, Simon, or quite honestly, none of them at all.
Hiya, James.
Hello, mate.
Lovely speak to you. Long-time listener.
Welcome.
First-time caller.
Welcome aboard.
I had to phone up. I am a Freemason. I've been for about 10 years. I never, ever thought about getting into it, but my dad became one. He asked myself and my brother to join, so I joined.
Yeah.
It was quite an experience.
What do you mean?
Well, until you do it, let's say when I joined, the next day, I felt like I had a huge amount of new friends that were there to support me.
That's nice.
And it was quite a feeling. But some of the things that you've said...
Yeah.
I don't think any of those people in the police will be bothered about saying they're Freemasons in any way.
Well, then why would the head of the Masons be threatening legal action?
I really don't know.
No.
Because we're supposed to be more open now. We are more open. If you join the Freemasons now, you get a pamphlet explaining everything that's happened during the ceremony, and you can talk to anybody about it and tell them all about it, how it works, your family and everything.
I suppose if you're saying, you know, a group of people who will support me, if they're police officers, politicians, and...
But not in a negative way.
No, but there's someone over there who's not getting supported by these people, then you've got a bit of a problem.
Well, no,
perhaps.
When I say support, I mean support in normal life. If you've done something illegal, you ask somebody to do that. It's in the Constitution. It's in the things...
So where do you think all the mythology comes from then, Simon?
Well, from what I've learned since I've got into it is...
Yeah.
Hitler...
What?
The reason it
went
underground...
You can't just say Hitler. Hitler?
No, wait.
I am waiting. I have to.
It went underground
yeah.
because Hitler considered, unfortunately, the Masons the same as the Gypsies, the same as the Jewish faith, etc., etc. So it went really underground.
Right.
And I think people took advantage of that during the 50s and 60s, possibly even the 70s. I mean, this is only my assumption.
No, fair enough.
But today... It's just not like it at all, James. It's not like it. And you mentioned the Catholic thing.
Yeah.
You can be any faith.
No, I got that wrong. It's the other way around. The Catholics...
It's the other way around.
The Pope doesn't want us to join. The Pope doesn't want us to join.
That's right.
Yes.
As long as you believe that there is something else, a greater power than us, you're very welcome to join.
Thank you. Why do you think that the head of the... Oh, they've released a statement about the commissioner's appearance on Nick Ferrari's show, actually. We feel compelled to respond to and correct several inaccurate and misleading representations of both the recent consultation held with the Metropolitan Police and Freemasonry in general. I'll address a couple of those if I feel I have to. But your point stands. There's nothing to be concerned about. And everybody, you can't imagine anybody not wanting them. But I need you to speculate on why the head of the organisation would be resisting.
I really don't know because we're going the right way now. We're being more open. I mean, the things that happen, I'd love to tell everybody. Basically,
can you not? Are you not allowed to? What can you tell?
No.
Okay,
no,
I'll ask some questions. Is there a funny handshake?
Well, it's not funny, but yes.
Oh, but you know what I mean. Come on.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. All right, there's a special handshake.
Yes.
Okay. Do you roll your trouser leg up?
Yes.
Why?
It's symbolic.
What of?
I can't... Do you know what? I can't remember.
You're my kind of Mason.
I can't remember. Shall I tell... People say to me, what's it about? And I say, you walk through the door...
Yeah.
You open your wallet, you get fleece of money for charity all night,
yep.
and then you manage to close your wallet just as you walk out the door.
Do you have a briefcase full of regalia?
Yes.
What's in it?
Of course, yes.
What's in it? Well, don't say of course. We're here to educate the ignorant.
Yeah, just watch that. They did that documentary, didn't they, on ITV? It was all on there.
What's in it?
You have your apron.
Yeah.
You have your apron, you might have a few badges, depending on what lodge you...
So it's like the Scouts, then.
Yeah, well, do you know what? It's not an awful lot different. I was in the Cubs and the Scouts for many years. It's not a lot different. We do a lot of ceremonies with all, like you say, some really weird old English with really, probably words you would understand, I don't.
And, bless you.
Nobody's got a clue. I mean, my father, God rest his soul, passed away 2 years ago. I'd ask him questions,
yeah,
and he wouldn't have a clue. And then you ask people supposedly higher up, although we're all equal, but some people are more equal than others,
yeah,
and they haven't got a clue either.
It's just a gathering. It's just the group. It's a social club.
It is a social club, but it's got its roots in the building of the temple in... Oh, I can't even remember that.
you're going to get expelled, mate. You're going to get excommunicated. You need to get back to your books. Just to clarify, Graham's worried. Graham's worried. You said badges, as in badges, not badgers, as in the animals.
No, badges.
No, I knew that, but Graham's... I don't know. I think he was flossing his ears. Thank you, Simon. There you go. Nothing to worry about. But the problem is, who's going to ring me and say, oh, I was in it for years. I let off several murderers. No one's going to do that, so you're going to have to take it all on trust. Richard's in Maidstone. Richard, what do you reckon?
Well, I reckon the same as your previous caller.
Yes, it's just going to be boring then. You're all going to ring me up. Well, There's probably a special message has gone out like the bloody bat signal above the big building on Great Queen Street. Ring James O'Brien, tell him that there's nothing to see here. Everywhere, all great, lovely blokes.
What you're supposed to do, basically, we have a card. We give out cards, basically, say we're Maidstone. As the previous caller said, Simon, basically, what actually happened is about Hitler was that actually during the Second World War, yes, Hitler didn't like Masons, and actually when he went into towns in occupied Europe,
yes,
he would actually shoot them.
Are you serious?
I am absolutely serious. If you go to the,
I know they banned it, 1934 or thereabouts, because it was associated with Jews.
I'm not sure about the association of Jews, but there are many Jewish people
in the Holocaust Memorial Day Trust. There are many
Jewish people. In fact, you know, in my lodge, basically where we meet, there are people from different faiths.
Is it something to do with King Solomon's Temple?
Yes, it is.
It is.
Basically, it's a building of the temples in Jerusalem.
So where does...
And actually about the architecture behind it, the architecture... And the other question you ask, what do these people do all day? They work in the Great Lodge.
Yeah.
They don't work there. Basically, they meet there every afternoon.
Well, why are they all dressed the same?
It's different people. It's like a uniform.
I thought it was different.
I thought it was different people.
I thought it was different people. They like a drink, don't they, the Freemasons?
Well, the idea is basically you have work, which is the ritual, and afterwards you have refreshment. And that refreshment usually involves things like toast, etc. So there is
a lot of toast. There wasn't a lot of toast being consumed when I walked past the other day. Mostly lager.
There was a lot. Well, there is. I mean, but that's actually, even that is historical. I go to a lodge and I meet there, and basically I don't drink because I have to drive. It's like most people, they don't drink anymore.
The rest of them are coming up the escalators at Holborn Station. So because that happens every day. I do genuinely walk down there all the time, and it's always full. So I like the sound of it, actually, but why do they all dress the same? Because it's a uniform. So they'll have other jobs.
Yeah.
That's not their job there. But just once or twice a month, is it? You'll have an appointment at the Grand Lodge.
Well, at the Grand Lodge, it's probably maximum four times a year.
Right. So they're all on a bit of a jolly.
Well, in the provinces outside of London, it may be up to six times a year.
Right.
We meet six times a year, but in the big, if you go to London, it's generally kind of three or four times. In fact, some are only twice a year.
So you put your gear on, you get your regalia, you go to HQ, you have a ceremony, and then you come out and have a jar.
Exactly.
As a previous caller said,
basically, yeah, actually, there is a lot of charity involved.
A lot of fundraising.
For example, like in London, basically, all the high rise kind of lifts they have for the fire service are all donated by the Masons. The Masons used to be, before the lottery, the second biggest charitable giver in the country. That is how big the Masons are.
I mean, there's a serious answer to one of the questions that I asked. If it has its roots in anti-Semitism, that would make sense. Actually, if Hitler banned it because it was associated with Judaism or with Jewish people, then, you know, there are parallels, aren't there, with the Protocols of the Elders of Zion and other anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. The Freemasons have somehow ended up on the same sort of hook as Jewish people historically because of associations. That changes the nature of the conversation. Not, I was going to say slightly. It changes it quite a lot. Thank you, Richard. What's not to like? And okay, and I didn't ask him, but I'll ask someone else. Why would the head of the outfit, the head of the lodge, the Lord, I mean, what's his name? Does he have a fancy name anyway? He's in charge of the United Grand Lodge of England, Order of Women Freemasons, and the Honourable Fraternity of Ancient Freemasons. Why would he not want the police to disclose their membership? At the moment, I don't know. But I might find out by quarter two. And just after quarter two, we'll be joined by Sebastian Lai, who's just found out that his father has been sentenced in Hong Kong for sedition after a ludicrous and what seemed at times an endless show trial. Horrible, horrible business. More on that shortly. But the time now is 12:32, and Amelia Cox has your headlines.
Thousands of people have attended a vigil on Sydney's Bondi Beach following yesterday's terror attack. 15 people were killed and dozens injured when the gunmen, who were father and son, targeted a party making the first night of Hanukkah. Hollywood actors have paid tribute to director Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle, who have been found dead at their home in Los Angeles. Authorities are treating it as an apparent homicide. And the British Medical Association is set to reveal whether this week's doctor strike in England will go ahead. It's been consulting resident doctors on whether or not to press ahead with a five-day walkout from Wednesday. LBC weather, heavy rain for Wales and the north and west of England, drier to the southeast, hazy sunny spells for Scotland and Northern Ireland with a few showers in western Scotland, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to
stay out all night? Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, okay, sales targets. Are we hitting
it? The dance floor!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2 for 1, you can choose glasses for at least two use. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard your flight to Geneva. This is your captain speaking, and I would like to take a second to welcome our very special guests. All the skis and snowboards that enjoy a free flight to winter wonderland.
The best winter holidays start with the right airline. Book your family trip to winter wonderland now on swiss.com and enjoy free gear transport.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal, and we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken, roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. Mmm. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo, the original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
12:35 is the time. One of this programme, in fact, this radio station's most assiduous and committed listeners, so committed, in fact, that his affection for LBC goes back far beyond my own tenure here, which has been quite long, actually, but he's been in touch. I speak of Scott, my mate, who says, after Have You Ever Fallen Down a Well, Freemasonry is my favourite talk radio topic. We've never done Have You Ever Fallen Down a Well, I don't think, on this programme, but we live in, or Scott lives in, hope. One day, maybe. I suppose the Ray Liotta would be someone ringing us from down a well, having fallen down it, wouldn't it? But, you know, what are the odds? But Freemasonry, and it's an age-related thing. Scott's younger than me, but it used to be a much bigger topic than it is now. It used to be something that would often pop up in conversations, in real life and on radio phone-ins, like the Bilderberg Group. I think the first time I ever appeared on the radio, I was with a lawyer who made a joke about the Bilderberg Group, and I had to say afterwards, what is it? And he explained, oh, people think that it's some mysterious, secretive organisation. that pulls the strings of the world, but it's nothing of the sort. And already there, the spectre of anti-Semitism appears, pulling the strings of the world, secretly pulling the strings of the world, a massive anti-Semitic trope. And I didn't know that it was one of the first groups that Hitler banned in 1934, was it, when he banned the Freemasons. And according to the Holocaust Education Trust, it was partly or entirely because they were seen as being very closely associated with Jewish people. So that's one area in which I feel the light is shining in. But if there is nothing to hide, then why would you object to calls by the Metropolitan Police to, not even calls, an insistence that Metropolitan Police officers must tell their bosses if they are members of the Freemasons. A couple of things that were wrong, that Mark Rowley got wrong when he was here with Nick last week, talking about women being very relieved because it's a boys' club, as Adrian Marsh of the United Grand Lodge of England, Order of Women Freemasons and Honourable Fraternity of Ancient Freemasons, says in a statement, "As proud female Freemasons, we in the Order of Women Freemasons and the Honourable Fraternity of Ancient Freemasons take particular offence to this misleading and inaccurate statement. Women have been Freemasons now for over a century, longer than they have had the right to vote. We are proud of our history and heritage, and inaccurate representations such as this are disappointing." I don't think that, do the ladies have their own lodges? They can't go to the blokes' lodges, or do you have gender neutral lodges? Oh Lord, not gender neutral. Where will it end? Saul's in Southend on Sea. I've had two calls from Southend today. Not that I'm counting. Saul, what would you like to say?
Afternoon, James.
Hello, Saul.
James, I am a retired senior officer in the emergency services.
I can tell from your voice. I can tell from the way you said afternoon, actually. From that moment, I knew you were an ex-copper. Afternoon, James? Afternoon, officer?
Funny enough, not a copper, another one. All sounds very silly, blowing me trumpet, but I was the most senior officer in my agency in the town.
Right.
From the dawn of my promotion to that position, and I should probably say that my predecessor in that position was a Mason.
Okay.
And had been for many decades.
Yeah.
From the dawn of my promotion, I received unbelievable pressure to join.
Really?
Not just from members. Now, two of my employees at the time were both members. One was a volunteer, his full-time job was in construction.
Right.
He's the one that sort of started the ball rolling. I then very quickly became aware, while sitting on different committees locally, that senior police officers, senior ambulance service officers, pretty much all my sort of my peers at my level amongst the agencies were.
Okay.
And it very quickly made clear that it would be very beneficial to me, that it's a very mutually beneficial relationship for them, and that it was frowned upon not to be in the position that I was in.
Why? Do you know why? Did you understand why?
To start with, no.
Right.
I had my suspicions, I think as most people do, sort of, what they hear of masonry and, the lodge and how it works and all of that. But none of that was sort of just, none of that I could at the time say was sort of anything other than hearsay. However, it got to the point where, now, my wife of 30 years, she is reasonably senior in another emergency service.
Right.
And it got to the point where pressure was even coming that way to her, aimed at me.
Have a word. Have a word with Saul. Tell him to join.
Yeah. Sort of, this needs to happen type situation. So I agreed to meet the head of the local lodge.
Right.
Had questions. Wasn't sure if I was going to get answers. You can imagine the type of questions I had. The outward looking ethos of corruption and all that sort of stuff. So I was really blunt, and I was asked, why do you want me? Why should I join?
Yeah.
I am pretty agnostic, as I'm about as agnostic as agnostic could be. So that probably wasn't in my favour, but. It was made very clear that everything they do for charity, and I have personal experience of this, of working with charities in the town, that yes, all that is absolutely correct. They give huge quantities of money to charities, especially all over the country.
Although I have to add to that, there's a Channel 4 fact check that found that of the £33 million for good causes that were raised in a year, nearly half of it was spent on charitable causes that supported their own members. So, you know, swings and roundabouts.
Well, that leads me on to exactly
I just got sent that by I Am Incorrigible. There's a blast from the past. Used to message me every day. Go on, carry on.
That kind of makes a lot of sense. So I was explained to me that the ethos really is, to quote him, was favour in the purest biblical term. Now, that we treat everybody in the lodge as one, and we favour our own. Hmm. And we favour in every way. Now, I said, okay, so what's this? How does that work for me? Is this just basically a front for being corrupt?
Yeah.
And they said, no, not in the slightest, but they gave me an example.
Right.
Now, and I think an example based around who I knew. This one chap I knew, as I say, he was in the construction industry. He said, okay, we can have five members that all work in construction locally.
Yeah.
He said, one of them will come to lodge and they will explain that they've just quoted for a contract at at Joe Bloggs House. He said they will come to lodge and they will discuss that with anybody else within that industry in the area. And the other four will all go along and try to quote for the same contract.
Right.
They will then all meet and they will negotiate what they think between them is a suitable price that they can all favour from.
Right.
So I took that as, I want a conservatory built. I asked one of them to come along. They quote me £10,000. The next one comes along, quotes me less and less and less deliberately. Yeah. So that the first one gets it and they will all benefit from that because he will go back to lodge, that some of that profit will have to go to charity and some of that will have to go amongst his peers in his industry.
I don't know if I understand. Am I being a bit dope?
So,
a bit slow.
So it's basically...
Oh, hang on, I've got some breaking news. The resident doctor strikes are going ahead from the 17th of December. There's I haven't got the full details in front of me, but the BMA uses the word overwhelmingly to reject the latest offer from Wes Streeting. 83.2% vote against the offer, with a turnout of about 65.34%. We'll talk about this tomorrow because they're obviously up for it, and I'm still not entirely sure that that's the wisest course for them to follow. But I digress. Back to you. So I didn't get that example. I don't want to. I'd like to squeeze in one more call if I can, but how do they all benefit if you and me go along and I get the contract? How do you benefit?
Because I overcharge the customer.
They're going to be very unhappy that you've said that, aren't they?
So it's done behind the customer's back.
So it's a cartel.
Yes, basically.
Yes. Okay, right. That is your experience. That is what you are telling us your experience was. And as I said at the outset, I have no way of checking, double checking, or even triple checking what anybody tells me. Although I imagine that members of the Freemasons will be very unhappy about being represented thus. A form of price fixing, I suppose. Again, it doesn't exactly justify some of the levels of mythology that have sprung up around the organisation, but it does perhaps speak to some of the perceptions of potential corruption. Thank you, Saul. Trevor is in New Eltham. Trevor, we haven't got time. Sorry, Trevor. The time now is 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
A 10-year-old child and a Holocaust survivor among the dead, murdered by Islamist terrorists at Bondi because they're Jews. But another man, a Muslim, Ahmed El Ahmed, turned the story on its axis and saved Jewish lives.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to...
Stay out!
That's brilliant. So, okay, sales targets. Are we hitting
the dance floor?
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2-for-1, you can choose glasses for at least two yous. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice move, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
Do you have a co-op card or membership number? In July, Co-op's CEO confirmed that the personal data of all 6.5 million members was accessed in a major cyber attack. If you're a member, your information may have been exposed, and you could be entitled to compensation through a group action claim. Check your eligibility today at jointheclaim.com. It's quick, secure, and easy to do online at jointheclaim.com.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
12:47 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. As I both expected and predicted, there are plenty of people passionately and completely refuting the recollections or the account of Freemasonry provided by our last caller. So I just want to get that absolutely front and centre and on the record. We do nothing of the sort would be the general gist of those contributions. But we move on to another matter entirely. You will be familiar, I think, with the case of Jimmy Lai, the pro-democracy campaigner and newspaper owner in Hong Kong, and his, it seemed at times, endless trial. He's been in jail since December of 2020. And he has been found guilty of colluding with foreign forces under the city's controversial, to say the least, national security law. His son, Sebastian, joins me live now on what must be, Sebastian, a horrible morning for you and your family and, of course, for your dad.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Were you expecting this?
Yeah, I think, look, everybody knew that he was most likely going to get a guilty verdict. The government alluded to guilt before even the start of the trial. There were allegations of witnesses being tortured. There's no jury. There's three government-appointed judges. So a really stacked deck. But I think what is surprising is the complete lack of evidence that they have. So they have 800 page of essentially his journals.
And that is the case against him.
That is the case against him. Yeah. So they've weaponized, they've destroyed and weaponized their own legal system in order to target my father. And like you said, it's been 5 years. I mean, this is a trial that was meant to start at the end of 2022. He's been in jail since since New Year's Eve of 2020. Mm-hmm. And throughout it all, he's been in solitary confinement for 1,800 days. And only now do we finally get a verdict.
And his health, we should reference as well, because it adds to the horror of the situation in which he finds himself. He's not well, is he?
No, he's not well. And his health is rapidly deteriorating. You might have heard of the news that, you know, in the last year alone, he lost 10 kilos.
Yeah.
This is 4 years of being in solitary confinement. So he already lost a lot of weight and lost an additional 10 kilos. He's having heart issues. In Hong Kong, look, there's 50 days just this year alone where the heat goes up above 33 degrees. He is in a little cell in solitary confinement with the light, with his window blocked off. So heat traps. So when it goes up to 33 degrees, it's much more in the cell.
Yeah.
So you have a 78-year-old man who's in these conditions and his nails are falling off. His muscles are getting infected. In the summer, he gets all these rashes. So he's bleeding everywhere and his teeth are rotting. We're incredibly worried for him and it's torturous.
We've, as you know, followed this case quite closely. And I think it's fair to say that there have been moments of hope. And hope hinged always on intervention from Western governments, most obviously your own, that you and your father's, the UK government, but also latterly the current US administration. I can't imagine you're feeling very warm towards the UK government at the moment, because they haven't made any difference really, have they?
I mean, as you know, the UK really, the US really led the call for my father, so we've been all so incredibly grateful for the continued support. I think the current UK government seems to know how serious it is, and they seem to be much more on side.
That's good to hear. So it's about pressure, isn't it? I mean, you can bring all the pressure in the world to bear upon this regime, but it doesn't actually mean that it's going to make a blindest bit of difference.
Yeah, exactly. And about, you know, pressure that so many people have been putting on our own government has made it so that they are very much on side. You would have seen the release by the the foreign secretary, by the foreign secretary today, condemning what's happening to my father. And I think now it's about putting action behind those words. Before it is too late, because
I mean, there's people may wonder why I'm not asking you if you've given up hope, but I know you, and I know that you don't. I'm not even sure you can spell the concept of giving up hope on your father's behalf, Sebastian. So we won't go there. But perhaps you could give people who haven't followed the story very closely a thumbnail sketch of what your father's quotes, offence, end quotes, actually was in the eyes of the administration.
Yeah, sure. So essentially, my father ran the largest newspaper in Hong Kong. But more importantly, for the last 22, 30 years, I should say, it was a pro-democracy newspaper, the only pro-democracy newspaper that dared to criticize the government. My father founded the newspaper with the belief that with information, he had choice, and with choice, he had freedom. And so him and his reporters, bravely reported, the news every single day, and using the national security law, that was passed in 2020, they decided to arrest my father. Now, my father had ample opportunity to leave. He's a British citizen. He's only a British citizen. And he could have lived a very comfortable life anywhere in the world. But as he said it himself, when asked about it, he said, "If I leave, I live comfortably. But if I stay, I leave meaningfully." He knew that by staying, he would be defending his journalists, acting as a lightning rod for other pro-democracy protesters. And so, you know, this man who 6 years ago arrived in on this island with nothing now had so much to lose, but also so much to protect. And so he decided courageously to stay and defend his principles, defend his people, and defend freedom.
Do you think that influences the government? Do you think the fact that he elected a path of courage actually wound them up, for want of a better phrase, a more grown-up phrase?
I think so. I think it's hard for them to understand someone like my father. It's hard for them to see this man with so much and with the ample opportunity to leave, but say, no, the freedoms that this place gave me is so important that I'm willing to sacrifice everything that I have to stand up for it. I mean, my father always had this incredible phrase, which was, you know, Hong Kong is so poor, the only thing they have is money.
And similarly, I suppose a guilty plea may have made his life easier, but not his conscience quieter.
There's nothing to... Exactly. He's not guilty of anything. He's guilty of defending his beliefs. He's guilty of defending beliefs that were protected under the Joint Declaration. And so that's nothing to be guilty of. That's nothing to be ashamed of. And he knows that at every single step along the way, he did the right thing.
So he's 78 years old. He's not well. He's been in jail for almost exactly 5 years. Well, it is exactly 5 years this month, isn't it? And the sentence, when it comes early next year, is likely to be harsh. But you carry on. You keep plugging away at people who can exert some pressure on the administration, and you keep hoping that eventually this facade will crack a bit, or that your father will be given a sort of... I mean, other people have been released by the same administration, but you have to keep hoping that he'll be on that list sooner rather than later.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll keep going, and you know, all the support that we've received has kept us very strong, and so we're very grateful for that. We're very grateful for, you know, support from...
I'm so sorry, mate. I really am. This is an absolute kicker. How are you?
It's been 5 long years. You know, there's days that are better and days that are worse. But I'm also incredibly proud of
course,
my father.
Of course.
That also gives me a lot of strength to keep pushing his case.
I think he'd be incredibly proud of you, Sebastian.
That's very, very kind of you. I hope so.
I'm sure of it. We'll talk again. And every time I see you, I dream of the day that we are talking from a position of enormous happiness.
And
fingers crossed then. Take care, Sebastian.
Thank you.
12:56 is the time. It got me there. I don't know. It's just hearing him refuse to be cowed by it that I found very, very moving. I've known Sebastian for a while since we started covering this story. We actually went to the same school, but that's a complete coincidence. And his father, of course, is in the same profession that my father was in. So there are various reasons why I find that story, I find his plight so moving and so important. But if you don't know much about it, then do look into it and do anything you can to encourage British politicians to bring a little bit more pressure to bear upon the Hong Kong regime. And yeah, I mean, listen, my enemy's enemy is my friend, if that's the right phrase to use. It would be not a diluting factor at all if it turned out to be the Donald Trump's administration that brought the crucial moment to the table on this. But goodness me, what a horrible business. Absolutely horrible. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Should we squeeze in one more call about the Freemasons? I think we can, can't we, if before Sheila takes over? Gary is in Chigwell. Gary, what made you pick up the phone?
Well, my wife, who's a consummate listener of your show, came down to tell me that you were talking about the Freemasons. So
you've got to get on. You've got to get on.
I had to listen, and of course, the first person I heard was that fella talking about how he was being pressured. Yes. And I understand that. If he's got a lot of friends or colleagues who are, you know, asking him to join, then, you know, I suppose it could feel that way. But all the rest of this silliness about how they were competing for business inside the lodge and everything, I mean, I'm not saying that it can't happen. But of course, it's not the way Freemasonry is meant to be. You know, you're told when you're made of a master mason, you are told that you are not there for remuneration. There are no pecuniary advantages.
So, what are the advantages there? Well, I mean, what is the kind of the quid for the quo, or the quo for the quid?
You get to, first of all, it costs money. So you're not paying. It's not like an investment in your future financial, you know, status. Mm. You are there to make friends. You're there because there are lots of other people there who are, you know, like-minded. You get fraternity, you know, brotherhood. You get to meet people that you then become friends with. Then you become family with. You know, they're your brothers. And I can tell
that's part of the problem, though, isn't it? Because I would hope I wouldn't. I don't have a brother, but if I had a brother, I might treat him a little bit differently from how I'd treat other people if he got himself into bother and I had some agency or power over what happened to him next.
Well, I agree.
You see
with
what
that.
I mean?
I agree with that. And, you know, there are, you know, you mentioned about, you know, I don't remember who it was, said, you know, 30-something percent of the charity that we raise go to, you know, Masonic charities. And that's true because we do support ourselves. We do, you know, we do support our brethren. When somebody needs help, there are routes available for them.
Journalists do that. There's charities dedicated to helping distressed journalists. But I'm out of time. I'm glad that your wife gave you the heads up so that we could, you know, just provide a little bit of balance on some of the points raised previously. That's it from me for today. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on the Global Player or the new LBC app. They're both free. You can stay up to date on all the top stories and listen to a range of podcasts, including mine, James O'Brien Daily. I think we've chosen and the two from the archive that we're going to put out over Christmas so that you don't get withdrawal symptoms. But if you've got a particular favourite, maybe let me know and I'll see whether we can change the schedule. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Swarbrick will be with you at 4, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. And I know from listening to LBC this morning, from early on actually, that not just the presenters, but lots of you calling in, are looking for some hope in the middle of all of this sea of horror that we constantly see around us in the world. With Bondi in mind, Pope Leo has just said in his daily address, enough with this anti-Semitic violence. Let us eliminate hatred from our hearts. Well, there's all kinds of different hatreds in lots of different hearts, aren't there? And it seems to me that education is the only way we ordinary people who aren't investigators or in the police or in the army, can tackle it. And we can tackle it by talking with each other, educating our children together about eliminating hate from our hearts. That's the focus today.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
from Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. The family of a man who wrestled one of Bondi Beach gunmen to the floor says he's recovering well in hospital. 15 people, including a 10-year-old child, were killed when a father and son opened fire on Jewish people celebrating Hanukkah yesterday. Stephen Silverman from Campaign Against Anti-Semitism has told us more needs to be done to tackle the spread of extremism.
Why have successive governments failed to address this glaringly obvious issue, which begins with Jews as its target, but really is an assault on the democratic liberal values that everybody relies on to keep them safe?
Thousands of people have taken part in a vigil in Sydney following yesterday's anti-Semitic attack. Tory leader Kemi Badenoch says the West needs to do more to protect the Jewish community.
What we saw in Manchester and in Bondi Beach was Islamic extremism. We need to do everything we can to decontaminate this poisonous thinking from our countries and make sure the Jewish people can see that we are doing everything we can to protect them.
Police forces across the UK say they are increasing their visibility among Jewish communities over Hanukkah. In the last half an hour, the British Medical Association has revealed resident doctors in England will go ahead with their strikes this week. Members are walking out for 5 days from Wednesday after voting to reject the latest offer from the government. Just under two-thirds of members took part in a survey on the deal to end a dispute over pay and jobs. Hollywood actors have paid tribute to director Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle after they were found dead at their home in Los Angeles. Reiner is best known for films including When Harry Met Sally, Stand By Me and The Princess Bride. Police are treating their deaths as an apparent homicide. Pro-democracy campaigner Jimmy Lai has been found guilty of national security offences in Hong Kong. The 78-year-old, who is a British citizen, was arrested in August 2020 following anti-Beijing protests the year before. The Foreign Secretary has condemned it as a politically motivated prosecution, but his family are calling for her to do more to press for his release. And cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin will soon be regulated in a similar way to other financial products in the UK. The Treasury says new laws coming in from 2027 will make the industry more transparent. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 92 points at 97.41. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.13. LBC weather, heavy rain for Wales and the north and west of England, drier to the southeast, hazy sunny spells for Scotland and Northern Ireland with a few showers in western Scotland, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
This Christmas at Tesco, get selected meat joints and boneless salmon sides better than half price with your Tesco Club card. That's what makes it Christmas. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland. Beef and lamb ends 28th of the 12th, hawk 6th of the 1st, gammon 13th of the 1st, salmon 1st of the 1st, club card required.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you. I will keep you updated on any developments in the Bondi story throughout the afternoon. We'll also have a report from Henry Riley, LBC's reporter, giving us the detail of that decision by the Doctors Association, the BMA, to go ahead with the Christmas strike. A very strong yes vote in that ballot, firmly rejecting Wes Streeting's latest offer, the government's latest offer to the resident doctors. But the focus of the programme this afternoon will be on Bondi Beach and the implications of the dreadful events of yesterday in Sydney. Two gunmen who killed 15 people at the beach have been named in local media as Sajid Akram, who was 50, and his son, Naveed, who is 24. He's deemed to be serious but stable in hospital, and police have said he is expected to face criminal charges in the fullness of time. You'll know by now that the shootings targeted Jewish people attending a Hanukkah event. The victims range from a 10-year-old girl to a Holocaust survivor well into his 80s. The father of the bystander, Ahmed Al-Ahmed, the extraordinary, brave gentleman who intervened and wrestled a gun from one of the attackers, has spoken to journalists in Australia and said his son was driven by what he called conscience and humanity. Two things of beauty in the face of the kind of hatred that led to those crimes yesterday. Conscience and humanity. And I want to focus on that this afternoon. I think sometimes after things as awful as this, and there's a lot to choose from in this world, isn't there, that's awful, the important thing is to try and step back. I think sometimes we need to step back just an inch and wonder amongst ourselves, really, how we can do anything that can improve the situation in the world, whether it's to do with anti-Semitism or anything else. But the focus is on anti-Semitism and racism, and specifically education. You remember, I hope, after the murders in the Manchester Mosque, in the Heaton Park Mosque, we spoke to two brilliant men, Imam Nasser Kurdi and Rabbi David Lewis, who work together in schools and other settings where young people get together to educate them away from hate, to do what Pope Leo has talked about, eliminating hatred from our hearts, in a comment he has made today. Enough with this anti-Semitic violence. Let us eliminate hatred from our hearts. There are people working day in, day out to try to do that for young people. And there are people doing the opposite in this world as well. So let's focus on where the hope is. I think standout element of this story for me is the Muslim man, Ahmed Al-Ahmed, who turned the story, doesn't take away any of the tragedy that's happened and the desperate pain of the victims' families and the loss for the victims of their lives. But I think his intervention, Ahmed Al-Ahmed's intervention, and the fact that he is a Muslim man, does turn, or at least gives us the opportunity to turn the story on its axis. He saved lives. And I think this is where the hope is. It's, you know, it's Hanukkah, the lighting of candles, the focus on hope, the focus on resilience, the focus on getting there in the end. And I think that's all we can do in the face of Islamist violence. That's because it's so dreadful and it's so distressing and depressing. But speaking in the early hours of the morning, the Prime Minister of Australia, Anthony Albanese, said they will do whatever they can to stamp out anti-Semitism.
What we saw yesterday was an act of pure evil, an act of anti-Semitism, an act of terrorism on our shores in an iconic Australian location, Bondi Beach, that is associated with joy, associated with families gathering, associated with celebrations. And it is forever tarnished by what has occurred last evening. This was an attack deliberately targeted at the Jewish community on the first day of Hanukkah, which of course should be a joyous celebration. And the Jewish community are hurting today. Today, all Australians wrap our arms around them and say, we stand with you. We will do whatever is necessary to stamp out anti-Semitism. It is a scourge and we will eradicate it together. The Australian Federal Police and ASIO are working closely with New South Wales authorities, and the briefing we've just had, we have had the AFP there, and the AFP Commissioner will return to Australia today. We will dedicate every